I want to welcome you guys to the technology session for this fall convention of CCB. This convention, this session will consist of first presentation will be done by Mike May regarding GPS technology, where it is, where is it going, and what can we look forward to, and what can it do for you. Then you'll be hearing from our folks in rehab during their presentation, and after that we'll be hearing about Mobile Eyes, a device that Mr. LeBlanc and his staff use and are bringing to demonstrate to us. For those of you that don't know what Mobile Eyes is, it's one of those new approaches to accessible printed media, and I hope that you guys can enjoy it. And towards the end, as I said, and I hope that it got printed out, that I will be talking about my experiences with those digital or analog to digital converters. And if there's time left, I may say a few words about my experience with the new talking iPod. Okay? So I'm going to turn the microphone over to Mike May to start talking about GPS technology, what it is. For those of you that don't know who Mike May is, he's an extraordinary gentleman. The more I learn about him, the more impressed I am, I tell you. But one of the things that he's done, he is responsible for, I shouldn't say he's responsible, but his hard work and everything I've heard about this thing called Sendero GPS software got me convinced to try it out and compare it to I did my homework, and I am a user of the device, and I use it with the BrailleSense, and don't regret spending the money that I spent, because it's worth every penny. So without further ado, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Mike May, and hope you guys can enjoy it and get a lot out of it. Here you go, Mike.
Thanks very much, Louie, and all of you for being here today. And it's exciting that we're streaming over those airwaves, too. So thanks to the crew in the background here. They're working hard ahead of time to get this going, and I assume we're going worldwide. What I want to talk to you about is a little bit in terms of why GPS and wayfinding is important. What is the state of the current technology, and where is it going? And I'll start out with a little bit of the background. As a blind person, I was always hungry for information, wanting to know what was around. And by all the natural resources, that being asking people for directions, having sighted people tell you what's around, I figured I could get something like 1% of the environmental information around me, which isn't very much. I wanted to know more than that. And so when GPS came along, it was such a beautiful way to have an access to the environment, to knowing what's out there. And when you know what's out there, you have options, you have choices, you make your decisions based on what you figure for yourself rather than what somebody is telling you. Because like it or not, a sighted describer is going to only tell you this small portion of the information, because they can only talk so fast, and they don't have a filter where you can say, well, tell me only about tourist spots, or tell me only about coffee shops, all of that sort of thing. So you get filtered information, and that doesn't really give you choice or independence. I was thinking today about the development of the white cane, and you know, you feel like this is something that must have been around since Ulysses, but it really hasn't, and it's only been in the mid 1900s. That it really started evolving. And you think about what were some of the things people complained about when the white cane was first being used. It doesn't pick up overhangs. It's really a hassle in crowded construction kind of environments. It may be easy to use in a hallway or something where there aren't too many people or obstacles. And good thing they didn't throw out the cane and reject it because it had these weaknesses. They could do the same thing for dogs, and you know, before 1928 there weren't official dog guides, and if somebody said, well, I'm just not going to get a dog until they get me one that doesn't poop. some of the same thinking has gone into looking at all sorts of different technology and GPS technology. Now, when I first started carrying one around at 12 pounds in a backpack in 1995, there were a few things to complain about. A lot of wires that could come unplugged, batteries that would go dead, the heavy weight. But I was still accessing the information, and I realized that the key here was looking at what you get out of something. What is the value versus what you pay for it? You pay for it in terms of time, the learning curve, and all of that. And the value is huge, but here's the tricky part. If you've never had copious location information, if you've never had access to, let's say, 60% of the information out there, you probably get by with the 1% you get from sighted people and figure life is good. Why do I have to spend the time and the money to deal with something that's going to have a high learning curve when it doesn't buy me that much? The truth is, it does buy you a lot, but you don't know that if you've never used it. So this is the tricky part for us as blind consumers, or if we're counselors and we're trying to turn somebody else onto the technology, it's really hard to convince them that the end result is worth the hassle and the expense. And that's a tricky thing to really deal with. So I could go on for a long time telling you travel stories and why it's important, but I'll just spend a couple seconds on that and say that it really is. And both in terms of getting jobs, keeping jobs, being able to have options for other jobs so you're not stuck in one job because you can travel well. There's nothing more powerful than good orientation and mobility. And that's a combination of a dog or a cane, using sighted guides, everything at your resources, including other alternative tools and techniques like GPS or other wayfinding devices. It's huge in terms of both social and career development, and there's lots of people other than myself who can attest to that. Like Louis said, using it, you get on any of the lists and you see people who are using it. Once they've gotten past the learning curve, then it's huge. Now, as you're thinking about the different devices that are out there, there's one other slight pitfall that you have to be careful about. And that comes when you're first learning this stuff and tearing your hair out a little bit and saying, this is really a pain in the neck. I'm not sure it's worth it. It's not giving me good directions. It's telling me that that my destination is at 9 o'clock and I know it's at 12. You know, this is a piece of junk. And everybody goes through that when they're first learning this stuff. So the tendency is to say, well, why doesn't somebody make something easier? It should be a no-brainer. You should just be able to flip on a switch and go. And there's a lot of value to making things simpler. And we think about it with every single product development discussion we have. It's powerful. It gives all kinds of neat features. But is it simple? Is it intuitive? Again, I'll draw the analogy with a cane. Using a cane in an open space with nothing around is pretty easy. In a complicated situation, it's challenging. But you do it because that's where it's really the most useful. In an open area with no steps or holes in the ground, it doesn't make all that much difference. But that's where it's easy to use because you don't get tangled up in people's legs and so forth and so on. So it's sort of the same thing with the GPS. Yeah, you can do simple, but does it really give you the benefit of all the location information? Is it helpful in terms of routes and location information? That's a question that you might be thinking about today as I go through this discussion. So fast forward to what's out there, what's available to us today. It's really huge that there are at least 6, or some would say 7, accessible GPS systems available. That's absolutely amazing to me when I look back to that time period between 1994, when I first worked on this, 2000, when I came out with the first laptop version, 2002 or 3 when Trekker came out. So that was the next kid on the block, was Trekker. So it went something like 7 years, 5 years with no GPS, 7 years with only one, and then all of a sudden we have 2, and then 3, 4, 5, 6. 7. So what else is what all is out there? The Sendero GPS systems are now running on three different platforms: the BrailleNote voice note products from Humanware, the GW Micro HIMS products with the BrailleSense and the VoiceSense, and the Code Factory Mobile Geo, which run on Windows smartphones. Those are the three Sendero-based systems so far. And then there's the PacMate with Street Talk. And then you have Wayfinder, also a cell phone product, but different kind of cell phones. Those run on Symbian cell phones. They're up to about their third version. They just released a new version last week. There's Lodestone, which is not exactly in the same category as the other devices, but a GPS orientation tool nonetheless. And the price is right. It's free. But it doesn't have maps. It just has points of interest, which can also be intersections. And the first version of GPS we came out with, by the way, was point by point, didn't have maps either. So they're kind of at the point where we were at our beginning, but it's free, and it's really based on the whole idea of user-generated content. The more everybody can contribute into the system, the more benefit there are to the users. So, and with the internet now, this whole shared user, shared content idea is very, very powerful. And then you also have the Trekker Breeze, which is also a newcomer to the GPS scene. So you have Trekker and Trekker Breeze. So you have a whole bunch of different options, which is absolutely fantastic because, as it so happens, not all blind people are the same. I know you'd find that hard to believe. A lot of sighted people would find that hard to believe. Bless their hearts. But it's absolutely true, which means you now have you have choices in terms of different devices. And it's not just the fact that we're different people. We have different needs, different situations. You might be in a city or in a country environment. You might want to be a keyboard user or a keypad user. Maybe size is more important to one person than another. Budget is a factor. I mean, all of these things are really key. One of the things that distinguishes these products the most is the user interface. That means, how do we operate the thing? Is it with a keypad, a big keyboard, a QWERTY keyboard, a Braille keyboard? These are all things that one has to really think about first and foremost. You can get hung up on the different features. Well, does this one have intersection announce, or does it trigger automatically, or did you have multiple repeat? You have all of those things that are a little bit more in the noise. The bigger decision is what sort of interface is there on the input side, and then you also think about the output side, Braille and or speech, and that's huge. If you're a Braille user and you can afford it, then having the location information at your fingertips literally is really valuable. When you hear a street name or a business name and you wonder, what the heck is that? Maybe it's in another language, or it just is an unusual name. If you can read those letters, it's a lot more valuable than if you just hear it and have to hit the spell slowly button. So Braille is fantastic if you can have it. And of course, that's something you can have on a BrailleSense or on a PK. You can add Braille displays to some of the other devices outboard, but it starts defeating the purpose of portability. If you have a nice little cell phone and you've got an external keypad and you've got an external keyboard, and all of a sudden you're right back up to something that's bigger than a PK. So the input and the output are things that you really should think about the most. And of course, one of the major deciding factors for somebody in getting to GPS is not the GPS itself, but what it's running on. So if you're a BrailleNote user, guess what? You have one choice: the Sendero GPS for the BrailleNote. If you're a PacMate user, you have one choice. It's only if you have nothing and you're making your decision that the decision is a little bit more complicated. And in that case, the GPS is just one of maybe 10 applications that you're considering, as well as this user interface business that I was talking about. So you look at, does the unit, do I need to have Wi-Fi, email, internet? Am I going to be using those things portably, or am I just using my email and my home computer so I don't give a rip about email on my portable device? Do I want the email to be in a phone? Well, email on a phone versus email on a Braille note is way different. You don't type a dissertation on a phone. So if you're really planning to answer your emails with a cell phone, it's not going to be nearly as productive as having a keyboard device. But maybe you just want to have a little quick check of your email, know what's there, and then realize, well, if there's nothing urgent, then I'll just deal with it on my PC when I get home. These are key decisions that you make. You look at all the applications that you have to utilize before you make a decision about which box you want to have, which interface, which applications, and then, by the way, which GPS. And that GPS is going to influence your decision, but rarely have I seen somebody that's come to us at Sendero and say, I'm going to buy a voice note and a GPS, and I'm only going to use it for GPS, and that's it, nothing else. There are some people. Not everybody has the resources to just have a dedicated device like that where you have $3,000 tied up in one device that's only one purpose. And one of the real values is the integration factor. So when you look at size and people say, well, the smallest GPS is a Trekker or a Breeze or a phone. That's sort of true, but also sort of not true. The little GPS receiver that I have on my shoulder is a couple inches square. That's pretty little. So if I'm a Braille note user, the additional size that I have to add to my system is only 2 inches square. And I call that the integration factor. So that's a huge benefit when you already have a PDA and you have to add on something that small. It's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward to just have that little device that doesn't have to go on your shoulder, for that matter. It can go on your belt or in your purse. Let me talk a little bit more about particularly devices that I know the best. And of the Braille devices, my personal favorite, don't you love it when people tell you that at dinner, you've got a whole menu of stuff, and somehow their personal favorite is supposed to make a difference to you? So, my name is Mike, and my personal favorite is the Braille Note PK. That's what I'm wearing, and it's almost surgically implanted on me. I rarely go anywhere without it because I want all of my information to be right there. I need to look up a phone number, boom, it's right there. I need to enter into calendar entry, it's there. And the Braille, yeah, press the belly button. It's pretty close. That's the next generation. So I love the fact that it's small, and small is big, is a big deal. Now there's some people who say, well, I much prefer having 32 cells, and therefore I like the Braille Note M-Power. So I'll go for the bigger unit. It's more productive for me. I would not want to make that trade-off. I'd trade off lower memory, even a slower processor, lots of things for portability. But that's me. That's my choice. That's my priority. But I've identified that about myself, so I know when I pick something, it's got to be small and convenient, so I have it with me at all times. The Voice Sense by GW Micro is even smaller than a PK, but it doesn't have a Braille display. But for those of us who like little, that's a really nice one. And, of course, not having a Braille display has one other huge advantage, which is price. Cheaper, yeah. I mean, sometimes Braille displays just aren't an option. It's just not in the budget. So that's the Voice Sense. And then in between is the Braille Sense Plus, which is smaller than a bread box, smaller than a Braille note, but larger than a PK. And it has 32 cells. So all of these different PDA options. And then the PacMate, which I'm less familiar with, other than physically, it's big. A lot of people love the idea of having quote-unquote mainstream applications, and so that's something that might drive their decision in getting a PacMate. The GPS, the Street Talk, is relatively inexpensive. So you're investing $400-$600 as opposed to a lot more than that. So the cost factor in adding on the GPS to a PACnate is one of its huge benefits. Now moving to the cell phone world. This has good news and bad news too. It's all about trade-offs. It's a long story when somebody calls up and says, well, what do you recommend? And you hate to jerk people around and say, well, what do you want? It's the same thing as the menu analogy again. Don't you love it when they say, well, tell me what you want. You say, tell me what you got. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you got. How the hell do I know what I want if I don't know what's on the menu? I want to know the whole thing. So I'm giving you the whole menu of things today, but there's not always an hour to tell everybody all the different options. But on the cell phone front, Sendero, in conjunction with Code Factory, who makes Mobile Speak, just came out with Mobile Geo. And this runs on Windows mobile platforms, so either Windows smartphone or Pocket PC devices. And some of these are even touchscreen, where they use the four corners of a touchscreen in order to choose the menu and to arrow down through the menus and so forth. I have an HTC model phone, which is has different branding depending on who your carrier is. But that's the Windows smartphone that I'm using and running Mobile Geo on. A lot of the, like AT&T offers the Pantech Duo. That's one people might have run across. Or the Moto Q is another one. And these all have different kinds of keyboards. So this is, again, a huge thing to evaluate. If you have any interest in GPS on a cell phone, go into the store and feel some of these things, because some of them are really tricky. And you might convince yourself that you can get used to it, but you definitely want to look at the different options and make that decision ahead of time. Because some of them aren't cheap. If they're under contract, they might be $100 or $200. If they're not under contract, these Windows smartphones can be $500, $600, $700. So the software running on this smartphone is essentially the same thing as I'm running on my Braille Note. But of course, it's implemented differently. Because if I want to search for Starbucks on my Braille Note, I type in those letters, I hit the find command, Starbucks, enter. It searches out and it finds it. Well, on a phone, the typing is a little bit more difficult. Essentially, you use text messaging kind of typing. Well, you tend to type less if you have to do it in a text entry format versus having a full keyboard. So the way it works in short is that the keys, 1, 2, 3, all the way through 0, have a particular function identified with them, with each one. And there's actually a second function with almost all the keys. So if you press, let's say, number 4 for nearest intersection, you could hold down the number 4 for a second, and there would be a second command, which is detailed intersections. Or number 8 is what's the point of interest. Hold down number 8, and you get a list of points of interest. So it's pretty easy to learn, 10 different commands, essentially. And then all of those commands are also in a menu. So if you just want to hit the menu key and arrow down through it and hear a list and then select them, you can do it that way. But all the basic functionality is the same as on the Braille Note. Now, one of the key things that I think is really important, and it's something, if you were taking notes, I would take note of how automatic is the GPS device that I want to use. And the reason for that is because when you're operating with a dog or a cane in one hand, you're kind of a one-armed bandit. I mean, you got one hand to work with, and if you're carrying something in the remaining hand, then you have no hands to work with. So you want the GPS to know what you're thinking. What do I want when I want it? And I've spent a lot of time thinking about that, and when we designed the Sendero interface, this is what I've had in mind. Can the computer anticipate what I want in a given situation? For example, when I come up to an intersection, what do I want to hear about? Is it time to cross? Yeah, there's that. Where am I? What is the name of this intersection? What are the cross streets? maybe what angles are they coming in at? Which way am I headed? What points of interest are nearby? All those kinds of things. So our systems, the Sendero systems, can do that all for you. And you can pick and choose ahead of time. Because some days, I want to just go out and hear everything that's around and have the whole have the thing blither to me nonstop. Other days, I'm thinking, I want more quiet time. So really, all I want to know is the name of the street when I come up to it to confirm where I am. So I don't have to count streets or anything. I'll just get a little reminder what the street name is. So with all the Sendero products, you can tailor them to give you as much or as little automatic information as you want. And there's even one feature that will only announce something to you if you stop. And the GPS, of course, it knows when you stop because, well, you can, it knows the speed. So you can get the speed announcements while there's also not moving, which is speed zero. So when you're not moving, it says, oh, okay, my user has asked me to announce where am I when he stops moving. And so it does it. And I get that information. That's kind of handy. So it never talks as long as I'm walking, listening to for different environmental information, only when I stop. And we use the trademark term look-around mode for all of this stuff. And the look-around mode has a whole lot of different features, and I won't go into all of it now other than to just say the importance of it is that the device is anticipating what I might need. And that's huge in terms of not having to use your hands to implement a command. You might need a hand to look up on the Braille display to see what something was said or what a distance is or to review something, but that's different. You don't have to do it. You can just get the announcements automatically in the look-around mode. One of the most exciting things we've implemented has been on our wish list since the beginning, and there is no other GPS device, commercial or otherwise, that has this until a couple days ago when we released version 5 for the BrailleNote products, and that is points of interest in your direction of travel. So previously, if you said, tell me about all the points of interest around me, and this is the way all the commercial products work, it just uses a full circle, and it's based on proximity. So the nearest point might be behind you. The nearest 10 points might be behind you. We now have the option to find out only about the points in your direction of travel, and you can actually change that wedge, if you will. So by and large, it's telling you about everything that's between, let's say, 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock in front of you and a little off to the right, a little off to the left. And that really, that helps filter the information. That's made even more important by the fact that the systems have 15 million points of interest across the country in the U.S. and Canada. And because there's so much information, you need to filter it. So you can tell the look-around mode, only give me restaurants or only give me tourist attractions. But you might want to hear about everything. And if it's only in your direction of travel, that cuts it down by probably two-thirds and helps filter the information, make it a lot more relevant because it is the way that you're traveling. You can also do searches in a direction of travel. Either say, only tell me about points in front of me in your search, or I only want to hear about points that are north. You might be in a hotel and the concierge says, well, the town is north of here. And you say, okay, well, I know that now. I'm going to just search for points north before I even go out or get a direction even going. So that's a huge thing that's available in version 5 for the BrailleNote. Those things will be available in the other platforms for the phone and for the VoiceSense, BrailleSense, as well, probably within 2 or 3 or 4 months. Not sure how long it'll take them to implement those things, but those options are available to them. I was talking about the value of the mobile phone interface, and of course the convenience factor is huge on these devices. The GPS can be built into a phone. 99% of the time, the GPS receivers in the phone aren't as good as the one I'm wearing on my shoulder. And part of that is because they have to commit to a GPS chip, and then they make that phone, and by the time the phone comes out, that GPS chip has probably been surpassed by a better one. So by buying external GPS devices, you can always stay ahead of that curve, and you're not locked into a less sensitive GPS piece. I tend to prefer the external GPS receiver, but having one built in is convenient, and if you don't mind waiting a little longer to acquire a position, and if you don't mind the lack of sensitivity when you're up against buildings, then you can put up with it. So, for example, my two hips here, I have on two phones. Left hip has got the Mobile Geo on the HTC S730 with the Sendero software. And the right hip has a Nokia N82, primarily because of the KNFB reader and wanting to have scanning capabilities, particularly when I'm on my own in a hotel room or something like that. I wouldn't read a book with it, but it's nice to snap a shot and see what a particular piece of paper is. Those phones, those Nokia phones, run the Symbian operating system, which will not run the Sendero software. They do run Wayfinder, Wayfinder Access. Wayfinder Access is a cousin to Wayfinder Navigator, which is the one for the mainstream sighted market. And it's Wayfinder Navigator is an excellent product. Access is pretty good. And if you have a Nokia phone like this N82 and you can't have a second phone, that's your only option, and it's a reasonable one. The user interface is pretty similar to what I described for the Geo. There's different functions assigned to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 through 0. And it covers most of the bases pretty well. What it doesn't have that all the Sendero products have is Explore mode. Explore mode means that I can virtually put myself at this hotel while I'm still in Davis, California, and I can go through the different intersections, see how far each block is, and do everything. It's a talking map, essentially, is what it is. And I'm just using the arrow keys. Up arrow goes forward, right arrow turns right, and I explore around, and I get myself a mental image of where things are. You can do that with Mobile Geo, even on your phone. You're just using the arrow keys on the phone to explore around in the same way. Wayfinder, you can't do that. They have something they call Explore mode, but what it really is the ability to put yourself at a location and find out what points of interest are around there. And that's a new feature in their version that just came out last week. But you can't cruise around in a talking map kind of capability the way you can on the Sendero products. So that's one major difference between the two, and I think is huge value to having Explore mode on any system. I do use the built-in GPS receiver on my N82. It's nice just because it's there, and if I didn't have a GPS with me, which would be rare, I usually have more than one, but theoretically it would be really nice to just have the phone, no other receiver, keeps the price down, and that's all good. So Wayfinder is definitely an option to consider. It's there is a recurring cost to it that you don't find with any of the other systems. So once you buy Mobile Geo or you buy any of these other products, it's a one-time outlay for the GPS. With Wayfinder, you have to pay for a data plan. If you get unlimited data, it's anywhere from $15 to $50 a month. $15 would be the minimum you would pay per month to have data access. The good news is that the data is on a server, so presumably it's up to date, more so than it might be having it on a memory card. So the data is updated about once a year, once every 9 months or so on a card when you have it within your phone or on your Braille note. But Wayfinder, it goes right to a server and just gets the data, what's ever up there. So that's nice. The other downside is it kind of goes back and forth. Good news, bad news, good news, bad news. The other bad news is if you lose your connection, all of a sudden you're stuck because your maps are on a server. And if you haven't downloaded them, you're without a route, without a connection. And I've experienced this particularly in drives from like Arcata, California, down the coast, and you cut through in some little towns. You lose cell phone service, and I wasn't able to give my driver instructions. And these sighted folks get kind of dependent on you after a while. Once you become... You become a good navigator, and they trust you, and you build up this trust, and then you let them down. You're in trouble. It took me the longest time to convince my wife she didn't have to spend time poring over a map, figuring things out, fretting over all of these things, or going to MapQuest and getting maps. Just let me do the navigating. And so now that I've got her trained, or she has me trained, which is probably the truth, I don't want to let her down and find myself in a situation where the GPS loses connection, runs out of batteries, or does something like that. So that reliability factor is important. So that's a little bit about the cell phone world, both the Wayfinder. The good thing, again, is we have options. Nokia phones, Symbian systems, Windows Mobile, all the different devices. There's hardly a system out there that doesn't have a GPS option on it. So I think that's pretty cool, and that deserves a round of applause. So let me take a breath for a second and see if you have any questions so far.
Actually, I have a question, Mike, regarding the... As far as wayfinding technology and resources regarding indoor travel, large buildings. I know there's been several projects out there having to use, what do they call those things? Barcode strips for navigation purposes, mm-hmm. and indicators, or using fluorescent lights to emit a signal that can be picked up by devices. Is there anything that you've heard of or you have been looking into that could possibly be available towards or for use by blind individuals navigating through large buildings?
Yes, there are a number of possibilities. There's nothing that has the same benefit as GPS. The benefit being GPS is free and it's ubiquitous worldwide. The maps aren't ubiquitous. They're getting to be, and well, certainly in all developed countries, they're growing in popularity, even in other countries. There's no equivalent of that indoors. There's no maps indoors, for example. But there are some different techniques. Sendero has gotten some federal grants, and we've been working with a number of different organizations, universities, and other research organizations on a couple different projects, and I'll tell you about those. One, some of you might have heard about, we did a test at Stanford University. We're using a dead reckoning device, which is a box filled with a bunch of motion detectors that keeps track of where you're walking, and it has an electronic compass. So if you turn right, it knows that you turn right, or you turn north, it knows you turn north. And the accelerometers, barometers, and all other kind of ometers in there, they know which way you're going, even upstairs. So the key to that is you have to know where you start. So if I know that I started at the front desk, and then I have a map of this hotel in the system, it can keep track of where I go. But one downside of dead reckoning is that it accumulates error about 15%. So after 1,000 feet, that would be 150-foot error, which is too much. After 100 feet, 15 feet isn't too bad. If I was headed for this room and I was 15 feet off, that's not too bad. I mean, I've been half a mile off before, so 15 feet is pretty good. So the way you deal with that is you have a known position point that corrects for it. And we used something called talking lights. The lights don't actually talk, but what you have is the ballast is unique to that particular light. It emits a unique flicker factor, and that way you can have a specific identity at each fluorescent light. And most commercial buildings have fluorescent lights, and the ballasts have to get replaced once a year anyway. So just put in a special ballast, And pretty soon you have position IDs for an entire building. And it worked pretty well at Stanford. We ran a lot of people through a couple of floors up and down on a course, you know, with multiple turns, and everybody made it through pretty successfully. There's a lot of things you have to work out in terms of that technology, but it's pretty exciting. The other possibilities are Wi-Fi triangulation, Bluetooth modules, RFID tags. There's anything in your barcodes that you were mentioning. There's a system at the University of Minnesota who we've worked with. They call it the Magic Flashlight. And it's essentially a powerful camera that picks up a retro-reflective barcode that's pasted next to, let's say, an office doorway, right, where the, let's say, the Braille label would be in your hotel rooms. There would be a barcode, a lot cheaper than Braille labels. Much more likely that they could be put next to every single doorway. So if you had a sensor that would pick up those barcodes and your database in your machine knew what place that was, then voila, you have another navigation system. Lots of these things in the works. We're working with a half dozen different organizations. I don't think anything's going to be ready for prime time for at least a year or two. Yes.
Oh, thank you. Okay, thanks.
The
GPS without a keyboard of any kind. And then my other question is there ever going to be a GPS or something that can read Thomas guides?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. The GPS only is the Trekker Breeze. If you've seen a stream, it's similar to the size of a stream, has a GPS patch antenna built into the front of it. And it's pretty straightforward. Its limitation is that it does not have the capability to calculate routes. So you can't pick a point of interest and then have a route calculated to it automatically. You can calculate routes to user points of interest. So let's say you have one at your home. You go out for a walk and you say, okay, give me a route home. It would do that. It does announce the points of interest. It has some basic look-around capabilities, and it has an easy-to-use keypad with a big button, big Where Am I button. So it's the simplest, but it's also the one with the least capability. So there are your trade-offs again. And the Trekker is also a standalone. It's got 30-some-odd buttons. So it's a lot more complicated to use than the Trekker, but guess what? It has a lot more features than the Breeze. So there's your trade-offs again. And what was your second question?
I was just wondering if there was anything that they would have
Thomas
for
guide.
The Thomas Guide.
Well, the Thomas Guide, the talking map that I was talking about is really your way of having kind of a Thomas guide, and you can get points of interest announced at those locations as well. The broader question is about content, and I think we're going to see content really increase, and we've started doing that at Sendero by facilitating user content. So when you come to a restaurant, not only do you want to know where it is, you want to know what's on the menu. You want to know if it has a Braille menu. You'd like to know if you were in a wheelchair, if it was accessible. A whole bunch of different things. So the content development, I think, is really where this technology is going to go, almost more so than the positioning. And we've got these six systems out there now. We're in pretty good shape, good options. But for the content, we really want to increase the content. So when we come into this hotel, every document that the public can get access to electronically, all of a sudden we have access to as well.
Okay.
Next question.
Sorry. Before I ask my question, I just want to make an observation about where, at the point where culture intersects with technology. I suppose you said something about your wife being more trusting of your willingness to, or being more willing to take directions from you. I guess this would, in time, lead to a breakdown in the stereotypes about guys not wanting to ask for directions. If you have a GPS, I guess it's not a problem. But my question is, you mentioned that the advantage of the Sendero product over an alternative is that it's updated more frequently as opposed to systems built into phones that are committed to, and then the technology moves on. Why is that? Why couldn't the same thing be said of the Sendero products, unless, of course, it's possible to download more frequent updates to the product?
Well, to clarify, if you have an online system, theoretically, if the server is keeping the data up to date, that online system is going to be more frequent than when you get any of these other systems and it's delivered where you have to download your own maps, and let's say they're only updated every 6 months or 9 months or something, then presumably the online system instant access is more up to date than the every 6 months.
Let me take
the one system that's online. The only system that does the online access is Wayfinder, which is the Wayfinder company in Sweden. It's not a Sendero product.
Okay, so I misunderstood. I thought you were saying the Sendero product has advantage over the Wayfinder access.
Not in terms of that.
Okay, we have another question in the back. One.
While you're sorting that out, I'll comment one other thing on your point. I love it when I'm sitting at a bench and somebody comes up and they ask directions, and all of a sudden they see my dog and they say, oh, sorry. And I've got my Braille note there, and I've been looking at the points of interest around there, and I know more about that neighborhood than anybody else they could have asked. And I say, what are you looking for? And they say, well, never mind. No, tell me. I'm looking for a coffee shop. Okay, well, let me give you 12 options. I'll tell you how to get there. I'll even give you the phone number if you want. You want to borrow my cell phone? Well, call them up.
Hi, Mike. This is Pam. I have a question about... I have the Sendero GPS on the Braille Note Empower. And the problem I have... And I love my GPS. But the problem I have is that every time I turn it on, I have to pair up the receiver. Is there any way, every time I get ready to use it, I have to pair up the receiver again? And is there any way, is to fix that in the system or what?
What she's talking about is the fact that when you have a wireless receiver, that connection can be lost with your portable device. And it has been known to be flaky, particularly in older versions of the who knows whether it's Sendero side or the Braille Note side. It's a little bit of both. It's sort of like your computer dies every so often and you want to kick it. You never know why. It should not be losing that connection frequently. It rarely happens on any of the devices that I'm using. So if you're having that problem, you should talk to tech support. And hopefully with each newer version, any rare occurrences of that should be eliminated altogether. And the fact is that if you have a built-in Bluetooth receiver in a phone, that would be one advantage to it because you're not losing the connection.
Well, I have the 7.5 on the Braille Note, and the I think the Sendero is the last update, the last upgrade.
I can only say that that's not a common occurrence, so it would be unique to that unit. Hopefully, it's not some sort of lemon situation, but it's an occasional problem. It's not a regular one. Just another question or two, and then we're almost up to 2 o'clock here.
Any other questions?
I do have one quick question, and maybe I am wrong. So here's a chance for Mike to really put me to shame, because I should have known this or should have figured it out.
Or maybe you'll put me to shame.
No, oh. I don't think so.
The gauntlet is laid.
Of course. Anyway, on the BrailleSense, we're using this in Sendero software. Is there a way to go from pedestrian mode to vehicle mode when navigating across town, because I notice that sometimes I get information that's, for example, I'll give the name of a crosswalk that I've already passed, and he's telling me that it's up ahead, and I'm wondering if there's a way to expedite that so I can get more accurate information. I mean, what I'm getting is fine, but I'd like to have a little more heads-up warning. And I'm wondering if there's a is there a vehicle mode versus pedestrian mode that could be activated by default, or can we switch back and forth?
You need to get a tracker.
Turn that microphone off. Because then you wouldn't have to worry about routes. They don't have it. You know, I would have to see that specific situation, and the one fun thing we have is the capability to save the routes or to replay routes, so you can actually, if you're having an unusual situation, you just hit it on what's called replay, and the Braille note will record your positions as you walk. Then you send that file to us, to tech support, and say, okay, now let's check out this one particular area together, and they can remotely be in the same place with you at the same time, which is kind of fun. In terms of pedestrian and vehicular modes, what the computer is doing is making its best guess at what route to take using the fastest road based on the speed designations of those roads. And so if you say, I want a vehicular route, and you're walking some of that route and you're driving some of it, you might run into some odd situations, because if you chose vehicular, it might not send you down a one-way street that if you were walking, you could walk on. So the best thing to do in that situation is to calculate a new route once you get on foot and say, I want a pedestrian route, so that it then is tailoring itself to your specific situation. And it is past 2 here, so it's up to you if we keep going or not.
We have 2 more questions.
Okay.
Sorry? What in reverse? Yeah?
Yeah, we can talk about this after, because we have another presentation coming up, and I will touch bases with Mike and with regards to this, because it's something that I think it's probably an easy fix, and it's probably something that I'm doing wrong. So, but anyway, I want to thank you, Mike, for giving us this presentation.
Excuse me.
Let's give Mike
a
hand.
Excuse me?
Yes.
Excuse me, please. I still have a microphone in my hand. May
you
I?
Do?
Yeah, last time I looked. No, seriously. Actually, I'm sort of dovetailing on to what you're saying about the routes and the speed. I noticed that I am a fairly slow walker, and I have had to either be careful or learn to walk a little faster, because with Trekker, and I appreciate your extreme fairness, Mike, comparing and contrasting all the machines, but there is, I think, a... issue with a person's speed, especially on foot. Can you keep up with the GPS, and what can we do about that?
Well, that is a point that's relative to GPS in general. So what you have is a situation where the GPS position is circling around with this 30-foot accuracy, which is the same for any GPS system. Some receivers are a little better than others, but once you get under 2 miles an hour, your speed essentially becomes in the GPS noise, and your direction of travel starts flicking around, right, left, forward. And we've tried to outsmart that with some averaging and some other things going on, but that's the reality of GPS. If you can move a little quicker, it helps. If you don't, you have to learn ways to work around that.
Okay, well... once again, I want to
come
thank
see me
Mike.
At the booth, and we can talk about any of this stuff
yes.
more. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Let's give Mike. Thank you for giving Mike a hand. And excellent, informative topic. And now, folks, for those of you that are in need of rehab assistance, I hope that this next presentation is going to help you a lot. I'm going to turn the microphone over to Tricia Leeds, who is the chair of the rehab committee, and give her a round of applause, and hope you guys can enjoy this.
Okay, you guys, I'm really glad you're all here. It's a nice, large audience, and we are hoping for that. We hope to make this fun and interactive today. Rehab and technology, they come together on many occasions, right? So this is a very good appropriate joint meeting. I'm going to have Ed pass out some songs to you guys. We're going to start with a song. It's about rehab. And we're going to ask you guys to join in. We got some in Braille. We got some in large print and then regular print. So, okay. We're going to do our best. And you guys can jump in because some of it's repetitive. And basically, it's going to be about rehab, and basically that's what it's all about. And then we're going to talk about how to overcome it all. We initially had a skit that was to be done today by Douglas Geary. Many of you may know Douglas, right? Yeah? Yeah, he's great. But anyway, he couldn't make it, and he's upset about it. So we're going to do our very best to dazzle you in his name. How about that? Okay, so I have to get Christy up here. And Ken Metz and Pat LaFrance in the audience?
Yeah, we're there.
Okay, do you guys want to come up here too?
I'm here, but I'm sort of stuck. If you give me a mic, if you have the wireless, I can do it.
Okay, we'll make this work. We're going to do a lot of improv today. Okay.
No.
Okay. Let me work with you. Okay, let me go in to get Pat. Here's Pat. Okay, you guys, we're going to start the song. And do you want to start up?
Yeah.
All right. What we're going to do is Christy's going to sing the song. For those who have it, you can follow along. It goes, it's the Hokey Pokey. And basically, this is not to make poking at Department of Voc Rehab. Obviously, I work with the Department of Voc Rehab. And it's not to poke at the consumers either. But it's kind of a song that kind of a parody that summarizes a little bit of the dilemma vocational rehabilitation counselors have and some of the problems that consumers have. We are really a unique organization in that we do provide employment and training for people who are looking for work, and it is very difficult. As everybody knows, the unemployment rate for individuals with disabilities is at 70%, and it's probably gone up right now. And I figured that really about maybe 5 to 8, possibly 10%, but closer to 5 to 8% of people who are blind are really working full time with benefits. And we have maybe another 8%, 5% who are working but are not working with benefits. And that means they're not getting medical coverage or any retirement. And it's really frustrating. It's frustrating for us because the employers really still are not comfortable. And I'm hoping that someday that the state of California will really do a push for state agencies, county agencies, city agencies to really try to start the move to hire more people with visual and total blindness. So that's what we're doing here. So the song goes, and Christy's going to read it because you do not want to hear my voice. I'll hold the mic.
Yeah, it goes fast. Okay, to the Hokey Pokey. The title of the song is The Door Business Dues. And the reason it's dues is because I said the door business blues. And Ed said, no, we got to be nice. I'm being nice. I wrote the words. He gave us the idea. Okay? So, is everybody ready?
You put your right foot in, you put your right foot out. You gotta stay in, 'cause the money's running out. You do the door business and you turn yourself about. That's what it's all about. You put your left foot in, you put your left foot out. You travel to a client, but you get a big timeout. You do the door business and you fill your taxes out. That's what it's all about. You put your right hand in, you put your right hand out. You write an IPE and you gotta duke it out. You do the door business and you pray it all turns out. That's what it's all about. You put your left hand in, you put your left hand out. You turn in an authorization and the system throws it out. You do the door business and your client gives a pout. That's what it's all about. You put one ear in, you put one ear out. You hear the regulations and you gotta twist and shout. You do the door business and sometimes it creeps you out. That's what it's all about. You put your head in, you put your head out. It's budget timing in and the money going out. You do the door business and the state is all in doubt. That's what it's all about. You get five clients in, you get one consumer out. You get the client back in, 'cause you gotta help them out. You do the door business and you help employers out. That's what it's all about. You put your whole self in, you put your whole self out. You get a 26 in and your supervisor shouts. You do the door business and your client's going out. That's what it's all about. Everybody, you do the door business. You do the door business. You do the door business. That's what it's all about.
Well, what we want to do, I'm going to pass this on to Trish, is basically what we want to talk about is how we, as counselors, definitely are, you know, facing issues and problems, and how we have regulations, how we try to help you folks out. But sometimes, you know, we have to follow the process that sometimes just, you know, really frustrates me. For instance, I did a funding for a person who was going to take the CSET for becoming a teacher. And close to a month ago, we did the money and we sent it out with her application. And it took a long time. And she called me at the last day saying, it's not there. I can't take the test. It's not there. And she was panicking. So she kept calling the state for the CSET, and finally the person says she's going to pay with a credit card. She says, well, let me check one more time. And the person says, oh, look at here. We found your money. So it's really frustrating, because when you're dealing with a state agency and you're dealing with another state agency, trying to mesh the two together, it's very hard. And like I said, we really do our best as both counselors, but really, the consumer has to do their job too. You can't come to us not prepared, not come to us without any idea what you want to do. I have a lot of people who come to me and say, well, what do blind people do? I don't know what blind people do. Blind people do everything. I mean, if we could be pilots, that'd be great, but they're not quite going to work. But, and you know, like I tell them, everybody is employable. Everybody is employable. If you think about it, everybody in here is employable. But think about, are you placeable? And that's the thing you have to think about when you think about help coming to us for help and asking us, I want a plan to be, you know, whatever it wants you want to be. You have to think, am I going to be placeable? And that is important. Okay, I'm going to pass you over to Trish.
You guys like that song?
Yeah.
You know what they told me? They have an R-rated version, too. But that's tonight at the bar, guys, okay? Okay, okay, they at the bar tonight, the R version. We're going to create it. Okay, so...
After the board meeting.
All right. You know, Douglas was going to do this one-man play today for you guys, and he was going to be what it's like to be a client of the Department of Rehabilitation, put on another hat and be a counselor, and put on another hat and play the role of an employer. And it was going to be about how he would get a job, and then the debate would begin between the counselor and the employer and him about how he was going to get that technology to do his job. So, you know, it's an interesting scenario because often we can be told at the Department of Rehabilitation that, you know, hey, the person got a job over at some state agency or maybe at a private agency, but they need to get their employer to pay for that technology to get them set up to do the job. Well, let me tell you, we are not ADA enforcers or 504 enforcers. Our job as a counselor is to make sure that you are set up to be ready to be employed, to be competent from that very first day, and we're to do it without delay. And those are the rules under the Federal Code of Regulations. So I want you all to remember that and know that. But sometimes this debate can go on and on. Maybe some people don't agree with that. My experience is that once I get somebody set up initially, the odds are the employer takes over, and they rarely ever come back to me for help. But obviously, if you need to come back for help, you should, because we want you to be retained on a job. We want you to hold that job. So we have some mentors here today that's going to go into some of these scenarios with us. We have Pat LaFrance-Wolf, and we also have Ken Metz. We are promoting a mentorship program around many of the scenarios you guys may confront as clients at the Department of Rehab. And it's not always easy, right, you guys? It's sometimes very scary when you deal with bureaucracies, and sometimes you just need someone to help you figure it out, maybe how to think through your justifications or just stand up to the issues. And you can do that in a really nice way. And I know some people get scared because they don't want to, they think that if they speak up, they could get bad things could happen to them. But that's not true if it's handled in the right way, you guys. It's probably not going to be true if you did it in a way that was nasty, believe it or not. But, you know, there's ways to do this with grace, and we want to work on that with you guys today. So, does anybody have any opinions about that little scenario I just told you? Do you like that, that the department is responsible to get you set up initially, even if you work for a government agency or any private agency? Well, we're going to come up with strategies to make sure the department gets this message. Does anybody have any thoughts about that, about getting your technology when you get a job? And sometimes it's, huh? Okay, that's the way it should be. You guys agree with that? Okay, well, that's great. That's unanimous. Okay. So what I really think about all this is that we need to get to the SRC in terms of making sure that they're a policy committee and that they really understand how important that is to the consumer to make sure that they have that technology the very first day they start a job, no matter where they work, and it needs to come through the Department of Rehab. No debating. No debating with an employer around it and getting in between counselors and employers and all of that. So we'll work on that. We're also working with the Blind Advisory Committee. And we're touching base with them. We're talking to them about these issues, and they can go at it with the department as well. And we would like messages to be sent out to all the counselors around this issue of how we're to assist you guys. So anyway, now you guys must have some good stories for us out there, right? Anything that's on your minds? Because we'd like to interact with you and display our mentorship program. And any of you who need a mentor, you can always contact the CCB office up in Sacramento at 916-441-2100. And they'll connect you to our group, and we'll help you through some mentorship issues. So you guys must have some topics out there you want to put on the floor with us. Anybody?
You know, we need to realize the fact that stories don't just have to be horror stories. They can also be some good ones that you might want to share. I think, unfortunately, we always think that when we get together in a meeting such as this, in a committee group, and really speaking just about rehab, all we ever do is blast them, and that doesn't mean they don't deserve it. There are times when they certainly deserve to be blasted for some of the things they're not doing, but there also needs to be a period of time where they get commended for some of the things. And I just figure maybe I'll go ahead and say that as I grew up, I'm not. Some people say I'm not grown up yet, but that's okay. As I was going through school, I have to say that the Department of Rehab was extremely helpful. Were there arguments, disagreements, fights, misunderstandings, all of the above? Absolutely. But at the end of August of this year, I just retired after working just about 42, 43 years out of my life. And I'd have to at least say that 35 years of that was because of the fact that I did get assistance through rehab. As I said, did I have to do all those things of arguing and and appealing and going to a supervisor? Periodically, yes, that did happen. But when I look at the overall picture of my entire working life, I also have to think of the things that I did only because they helped me. There was no way I could afford some of the equipment later on when we finally got into the era of computers. Obviously, when I started, we had the horse and buggy. But as we grew past that and the jet planes, then came computers. And there were things that they did extensively to help me out. So there are some good things out there, many good things. I think most of the blind folks that you talk about who've been employed for any length of time could certainly tell you the good things and the horror stories to go with it. But, you know, without that organization, a lot of us, I think the unemployment would be extremely high, probably at least at 95% unemployed amongst blind people. So there are some credits that go. Now, could that improve? Absolutely. And how does it improve? Well, those are some of the things that you folks out there need to help us with, because we're here, as Trish said, we're here to mentor some of you if you feel you need it. We're here to help, give you advice and counsel sometimes, both rehab people and those of us who have been with rehab and are, you know, now completed our work careers. We're willing to help out with advocacy, but it's up to you to give us those situations that you're having difficulty with. It's also up to you to put a lot of effort in to what your counselor is trying to help you with. If your counselor is sending you to some of the programs that are out there, OCB, DPI, any of the other programs that you might go to down the Riverside, at Blindness Support Services, Living Skill Center, that's the beginning. And the counselor does that. But, you know, we always think that it's up to the rehab counselor to say, here's your job, take your hand, walk you to the job, show you how to do the job, and then you get the paycheck. Doesn't work that way. Now, there are times where the rehab counselor may find out about certain jobs that are sort of in your interest, that are in your IPE, things that you are interested in and would like to do, but you've got to get out there and do the same thing that sighted people do. And that's anything from walk the streets, to send out resumes, to go online, to look at all the opportunities, to make phone calls, to go out to those job interviews. By the time the counselor has sent you through some of the programs that prepare you for obtaining a job and retaining a job and having all the tools, knowledge, and skills with which to do the job, it's up to you to also work for that job. It's not up to the counselor to give you the golden handshake. And in this case, the golden handshake isn't just goodbye. The golden handshake here is to give you a job. That's not their job. Their job is to prepare you and to help you, as I said, when they can. But your job is to take the tools you learn, the knowledge and the skills, get out there and start walking that pavement and doing it. You need to find a reason to know that SSI or SSA or SSDI is not going to really meet your needs for your entire future. It's not going to help you to just be on Section 8 and live on $900+ a month and go, you know, and enjoy that for the rest of your life. There are so many more things. You know, we talk about the American dream, and there are things things that are happening today that we, you know, that we just can't fix right at the moment, obviously. But the point is, it's still up to you to be motivated. It's up to you to have that little bit a little bit of that oomph that it really takes to go out there and to really get out there, go from door to door. And you know what? You're going to hear no probably 100,000 times, but you know what? The 100,001 time, you're going to hear a yes. And you go out there and you go to every job interview as if it were your first interview, because if you linger on to everyone telling you no, you're going to go in there, and these professionals know that you're down, you're depressed, and you're not up, you're not motivated, you're just sort of, you know, doing something by going there to please somebody, and usually it's not yourself at that point once you've heard 100 no's. But if you go out there and say, I'm going to get that job, I'm going to, you know, the little engine that could, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And it really does help. So get out there and do something with your lives besides just waiting for that rehab counselor to help you get the job. If you get that job, they can help you then. There's a good reason for them to help you with that equipment, to help you with the things you need if, in fact, that employer is not capable or able to help you for whatever reason. You know, that's fine, because you certainly want to, you need the materials to be prepared. But get out there and finally try and do something for yourself. Don't just wait for others to do it. Thanks.
Okay, you guys. Do you guys have stories now that you could tell us? Are you thinking about it? What? So Christy's going to help us out with a scenario, and then we'll have Pat be the mentor on this one.
I got a job 20 years after I applied to be a department rehab counselor. I got a job as a rehab counselor because the first time I applied, they said no. Second time I applied, they said yes. But, you know, the state is always trying to save money. They said to me when I became a counselor, oh, Christy, we see that the Department of Rehabilitation bought you a computer. Where is it? And I said, yeah, it's really true they did. It was 1998 when they bought it, and this is 1995. It was 1988 when we bought it, and this is 1995. So how do you think the equipment was? Like, up to date? Okay. Do you guys get those kind of comments from your counselors? But you have computer equipment at home. Well, Pat's going to...
Coming to you.
Someone has to give Pat the mic out here, too.
I just have a story to tell you all. When I was in 10th grade, I had a guidance counselor that told me I could never do switchboard work. It was not feasible. It took me, I guess, about 9 years after that to learn one. And 4 years after that, I started work at a law firm back east in word processing and hated every minute of it. I wanted the switchboard job from day one. 2 days before I left the word processing position for unemployment and SSDI, I found out that the switchboard position was available. And I went to personnel my last day and said, Phil, I want that job. He said, Barry, we'll put you on a leave of absence without pay, of course. And it took about 16 weeks to work everything out. Two other sighted people applied for the position. It stayed inside the Legal Aid Bureau, I'll tell you all. It stayed inside, and I got the position. Did it for 24 and a half years. So your dreams can come true, but you have to look for the opportunity, work for the opportunity. It took me 13 years, but I did it. And I've never regretted every day. And they still want me back, even though I'm out here in California.
That's a very good example of somebody who didn't wait till the counselor did it for her. She went out there and did it for herself. Okay, one more, another person?
Okay.
I was just going to say to Christy, as a mentor, is that, you know, you said the right thing to your counselor about my computer is so outdated that it would not work with the software that you are now using. And if you, your counselor comes up with a statement like that, well, you have a computer, you know, that can be one of the reasons that you need a new one. Now, if your computer has been purchased within the last year, that may not be true. And you may have to. But usually when you work for a state agency, they really are required to provide you with your with the computer, even though it may take a while. You may have to temporarily use yours, but they should replace yours. This sort of happened, actually, I want to tell you, to my husband, who got a job, and the Department of Rehab paid him to go to learn a particular type of a drawing. He's a partial, typical type of drawing software in which he could, on the computer, draw circuit boards. So he took that to work with him and used it while he was working at this place, and then he decided to leave because they wouldn't give him a raise after 2 years, and he was doing all the work for the whole department. So he resigned and he took that with him, and the company was going to sue him because he took his equipment with him. But, you know, that is was his equipment, and so he showed them the contract that they signed when he went to work there and agreed to use it. So, you know, that's another scenario that can come up.
I have a scenario in which I want to focus on culpability, if you will. I guess that would be a good word to use. A number of years ago, I had a situation, this was back east, where I had gotten a job as a medical transcriptionist for a local hospital. I went into the job at first using my own equipment, which started breaking down. In the meantime, I had finally enlisted the services of Voc Rehab, fearing that my job was going to have a kind of a short lifespan. The upshot of what happened is that Rehab and the hospital got together, and between the two of them, some kind of agreement out as to who would pay for what in terms of the equipment I would need to continue producing work. Well, unfortunately, what happened after that issue was, yes, I got the equipment. I was getting used to the equipment. I was having a steep learning curve on some of it, meanwhile not producing enough work to please the hospital. As it turned out, right about the 90-day period after the hospital purchased the equipment, and this was right at Christmas time, I was terminated 5 days before Christmas. The company, from what I gather, was going to turn the equipment back in after they got the tax write-off for it. And so I was dismissed so they could turn the equipment back in and get the refund. So they got the tax credit and the refund, and I had no job. My stance on it had been, and I hate to put the whole burden on Rehab, but I think had Rehab purchased the equipment, the hospital would have had no issue, or they would have had no leverage to fire me, because I would have continued to have the equipment and I could have worked out the bugs in the system. As it was, they were anxious to get rid of me because it was an economic kind of situation. So my question then would be, at what point in this kind of scenario, would rehab have been responsible for to help me keep that job? Or was this something really in which there's such a gray area where there's no definable culpability?
Well, that's going to take maybe several counselors to answer. Right. Like you said, it's real gray. It depends. A lot of companies do downsize, and we are not an enforcer. We could probably maybe talk to the company and try to figure out why you were terminated. Maybe they're trying to downsize. You know, it could be an ADA issue. We don't know. But like I said, the Department of Oak Rehab is not an enforcer, so it's something that you needed to talk to your rehab counselor, and maybe they could have negotiated something with the company. Anybody else in rehab? Okay, hold on. Nellie?
Hold on.
I think that at the first point where a visually impaired or blind employee gets notified by the employer that they are at risk, or there's actually a plan to terminate the employment, at that point, once the individual gets the information, is the time to address it with the rehabilitation counselor, and if they want the assistance and intervention of the rehab counselor, a meeting should be scheduled to meet with the employee and the employer to identify, you know, what the issues are, and not for the department necessarily to go in there as an enforcer, but to go in there to facilitate problem solving so that the individual can save the employment, save the position.
Anybody else who's okay?
I have a couple questions. First of all, were you on probation at that time?
Past probation.
Past probation, so you got no notice, you were just terminated. Illegal. Yeah. It's. And okay, he's saying it was illegal. He was just called 5 days before Christmas and, you know, said, you're done, finish your work, you're terminated. Well, I think there's a lot of this kind of thing that goes on. A lot of employers will use the opportunity to get the tax credit. A lot of folks will also go through things like the career opportunity kind of stuff, and they have no intention of keeping the client, the employee, after the time of benefit for the company. And you know, maybe this is something that we can work on for national legislation, because if it happened to you, I know of other people it's happened to. How many by voice people have been terminated before your probation has, you know, you just reach probation end and you're terminated? Anybody? Okay. Two. I know that happens. And then anybody been on a career opportunity grant kind of thing and had that happen to you? Yep. Okay. So, you know, maybe this is one way we need to do some national legislation, and also talk to lawyers who handle employment issues in terms of ADA, and we need to research where ADA can help us out in this area, especially because ADA has now been strengthened.
Pat, did you want to say? Hold on, Ken. Yep. Otherwise, it won't be.
There we go. I think also we need to really make good use. If you were terminated from the hospital and you'd already passed probation, they need to go normally through a program period of giving you an interim evaluation, telling you where you need to improve, especially if they are receiving state and or federal funding, and hospitals certainly do. And in that process, you need in California to go to one of two or both places. That is the Equal Opportunity Commission, which is the federal. They handle ADA complaints because this sounds, at least, now obviously none of us here knows all the circumstances, but it sounds like it certainly warranted an investigation to see if they were just playing with the taxes and or if they had good reason to terminate you. The other is the Fair Employment and Housing Group, FEP, out of Sacramento. That's the state organization, and they also handle discrimination complaints. Now, that may not get you anywhere, but at least you would certainly have found out where the errors were. They are, the employer is obligated to tell you at least why they are terminating. Is it a downsizing? Is it because of performance? Whatever it is. But once you've passed probation, they do have to give you the evaluation, whether it's interim, if it's, you know, within the 90 days or 120 days or within a year, they have to give you an annual evaluation to tell you where you stand. And there is a certain process that they really have to follow to make sure that they cover all areas. So this is something else. We can't just allow people to tell us that we're terminated or to tell us that we can't have a job in some cases without creating something to find out what the reason is. We need to really make these people accountable to someone. And that's why you need to, if you really feel you have an honest case, you've been working hard, you've been doing your work, and you haven't been fooling around, and you've been keeping up with the other folks, you have a case there because they had the equipment for you, they got the tax break, gave it back, and that way they were able to sell it, get more money. So in essence, they were double dipping, and you were left out in the cold. So never take a no, or never take a you're fired, you're terminated, whatever, if you really feel you've been doing the work without an argument or without a fight. That's why we have offered through the CCB office for many of us to be mentors. As part of my retirement, when I did retire, one of the things I want to do is to work with rehab, to work with people that need some advocacy. So, I mean, I'm also willing to give out, you know, after a while, my phone number and everything. I'm not going to win every case. I'm not a professional, so I never charge for it. I just want to do it as a volunteer. But the point is, some of us who have been through these arguments and through these situations for a lifetime at least have somewhat of a handle. That doesn't mean we'll win the cases all the time, but we do have a handle on what the thought process is from these employers, and we can't just let them get away with it. The economy is not great. There are many things going on right now, and you know what? We need money just as well as the next guy.
I wanted to comment on some of the people that I see coming into my office, and they were working, and they didn't know their rights as a person with a disability. If you are, and these are for the folks who are working now and who are out there, if you are disabled and you're working and you are put on some kind of medical leave for one reason or another, please do not leave the job. Do not sign the paperwork until you really understand your rights. A lot of people figure, well, okay, I have a disability. I can't see too well. I'll just go ahead and sign the paperwork and, you know, I'll find another job. Don't do that. Really work with the company and try to figure out what can be done. Unfortunately, these folks contact state rehab after 2 or 3 years after they're unemployed. So for those of you who know people who are disabled, tell them to hang in there and find out all their rights. For those who are starting looking for employment, I have two websites that I'd like to give out to people. here in California. One is the, I'll just say it right now, it's the californiacareerzone.org, and the website is cacareerzone.org. That's a really good assessment tool to put into your computer if you have one at home, or go to the library or go to the lighthouse and really do a personal assessment. A lot of times people really don't know what they want to do. They even think about trying to career that is kind of so-so, you know, like you say you want to go into massage therapy. So you might want to go into that, and then you have to really do a job market survey. Find out how many people are out there and how many people are really making some kind of employment out of that. The other one is afb.org, and they have a career zone as well. That's a very good place, and they also have a mentor system too. Career Connect. And that is really good for people out there and people in this room to really look into it if they're looking for employment. The more you come into our office with more information, the better it all is for us. We're not fighting, trying to, you know, I wouldn't say fighting, but just trying to guide you into saying, well, you know, that's a great area to get into, but what kind of employment is in your particular area? I know some people where I am in San Bernardino, and they want to do some jobs. It's just, you know, well, I want to write for screenplays, and they're living in San Bernardino. And I'm going, you can go to the community college all you want, but if you really want to be in the movie theater or movie business, you got to be in that area. You can't do it from San Bernardino. So that's what you have to think about. Like I said, everybody is employable, but are you going to be placeable after you get your training? Let's see, what is afb.org? Okay. Yeah. All right. Anybody have comments? Pat? No? Okay. Oh, hold on. There's two back there. Hold on.
We have about 8 minutes to do this segment, and then we'll skip to one last thing for you guys.
Let me ask a question regarding a scenario in rather general terms, partly because I think the statute of limitation, so to speak, has long since come and gone. But in general terms, does the Department of Rehab have the wherewithal to compel a training program which wasn't able to get all the, you know, hardware, software together before the official start of the program, and with the result that the life of the program ended before the particular course of training could actually take place. I know I'm being rather sketchy about it, but just in general terms, can the client of the department go back to the rehab and say, look, there needs to be a renewal of eligibility for this training program, in as much as it couldn't be completed. It didn't go as far as career job placement. Let me stop there. Hopefully, there's enough clarity in the question.
Well, actually, there isn't. If you're saying that, I'm going to wait for the speaker, I'm sorry. If you're saying that you were in a training program and you didn't get the software or the computer to do the training, then you got into the program and then the program terminated and then you got the software, is that correct?
No, well, the point is that by the official end of the program, the the software and hardware had not been present for a sufficiently long period of time for the specific training skill to have been taught.
So
in the end, what I had to settle for some other kind of placement, not what had been indicated, by rehab, to be the skill taught. I just want to know: is there an extension? Could there be an extension to such a program?
Well, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Was this program an agency that the Department of Rehab contracted with to
yes.
do some training with you?
Yes.
So it was an agency outside the Department of Rehab.
Yes.
And what? They ran out of funding, so they closed?
No. You see, they somehow in the planning. They didn't, either they weren't sure when all the hardware and software would be there before the beginning of the program. So it was one of these deals where it would arrive any moment and so on and so forth.
And it never came.
And it didn't come in time before the end of the program.
So that agency closed down its doors?
Well, it's one of these programs that goes on for a specified period of time. So when you go through it and that time is up, that's it. You take away whatever you have from it. It's just to put it in general terms, which is what I've been trying to do. Is there anything in the regs that says a training program must be completed?
You know what? It is our responsibility to make sure that you can complete your programs. I'm working with a person right now she needs this family law software to be made accessible for her to become a lawyer to do her work. And, we are working with Steve Clark to look at scripting. We're doing whatever we can do, help get readers in place, whatever we can to help her access that information. It does come back to us at the department to make sure that you're getting your trainings completed. So we want you to reach your goal. Okay. But we don't have much time. I'm so sorry. But I just want to let everybody know the mentorship program is very, very important because I know a lot of you have topics that are not working for you out there. And that's why we started this mentorship program through the Rehab Committee. And once again, the phone number is 916-441-2100. And that'll be the CCB office that will pick up. And then just tell them you're interested in the Rehab Committee's mentorship program, and they'll start connecting you to us. And we can talk you through all these things.
Chris?
Yeah.
Yes, I have two things I want to mention. First one is with rehab counselors. One of the things I find very frustrating is that when I entered the program, that they promised me a lot of things, that equipment that would help me.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I never received hardly anything. I tried to go to DPI,
mm-hmm.
and even DPI contacted my rehab counselor and said,
right,
this is what
good.
He needs. I never received anything. And then what I found frustrating was...
I'm going to talk to you after,
okay.
for sure, okay? So this is how we can work with you.
Okay.
We just want to just move it through for the next 3 o'clock.
One real quick thing, talking about being an advocate for myself, I try to go out and seek employment, and one of the questions, I can pass for sight. I'm a
mm-hmm.
partial,
right.
and I have the... I'm blind in one eye, so I also had cosmetically the prosthetic I put in so I could pass.
Okay.
So like the whole thing, the whole fake thing. So the issue is now that I'm seeking employment, does the employer have the right to know that I'm legally blind? And can they ask that question?
Not at the interview. They cannot ask any medical questions. You have to remember, if you have the right skills for the job, that's what they're looking for, and those are the questions that are related to it. However, once you accept the job, you, to the best interest to you, you should really let them know that you have a disability. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they cannot provide the adaptive equipment or any of the reasonable accommodation that's necessary for you to perform the job. And if you keep it silent and you're not performing the job, then they can terminate you. So it's, you know, you do have to let the employer eventually know, but at the interview, mm-hmm. know.
And there's different ways to go about that scenario. Sometimes people bring in a laptop that's adapted to show them, hey, this is how I do it. And they just go into the rapport with the employer right away, but they always focus on their qualifications. They stay focused on their qualifications for the job. Okay. So I'm really sorry. You know what? We're almost out of time.
Can I just give one quick compliment?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. I'm a grant writer, and I was able to create my own job with rehab, and I went into my counselor in mid-June, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and I needed some equipment because I needed a mobile office. My counselor was my advocate and mentor, and he told me I need to get the letter from my employer, I needed to get the bids in, and I had a deadline because he knew about the budget problem. It had to be done before June 30, everything done. I was able to do it all in 72 hours, and my equipment was delivered, and mm-hmm. I want to thank Rita.
All right. Okay, so you see how this works with technology and rehab coming together for joint meetings. I just wanted to give you a couple updates that we're working on, and then we wanted to read a resolution to you that we worked on. Mainly, there's a couple things that are happening in the South to people, and I wanted to just let you know that if anybody says to you that you can't have technology in the job development phase to do your job search and your job placement, that is not okay, and I hear that's being said to some of the folks in the San Diego area, actually. Okay, so we are just letting you guys know that that's not appropriate. The other thing is, Richard can vouch for this as our transition person at rehab, some people are being told that they're not going to be set up at age 16 with us, which that is something we really want to make sure we're doing. We want you to be set up with us at least by age 16 to make sure we're working with you on your job skills early on. So if someone says no, that's not right, call our group. Yeah. Call our mentorship group, and we'll help walk you guys through those processes. Okay, we are working on some infrastructure issues with rehab internally for you guys. Our computers are often not working. They say it's due to bandwidth problems, and we sometimes get attachments, and we can't open up the email. Otherwise, it will crash our computers. This has been going on for a year or so now. So we want to make sure we keep on that. We're working with the Blind Advisory Committee to educate them on those issues to help us out. The other things are we're trying to develop a better line of authority with Blind Field Services so that we have a better line of authority with the clerical staff. I think that's, you know, we've had Catherine Skivers help us to get SB 105 passed, which was fantastic of her. A lot of strength to get that through, and it's really been a benefit to us to have a division for the blind now at the Department of Rehab. But the truth of it is we do need to work on how we're going to have more line authority over the clerical issues as well. And then basically we do have some high caseloads. Some of the counselors are carrying 142 cases, and that's just too many. And we'd like to ask rehab to help spread it out a little more so that, because there are some people that have a lot less, and nobody can help you guys when they have 142 cases. So anyway, the budget's been a big issue as well. We're really concerned about that with you guys because they had given us the same amount of money that we spent on you guys last year, but they cut it by 13%. So if you counselors spent a bunch of money last year, good for you guys. So we have more money this year. But the thing is that, you know, we are concerned about how they're going about the budget. We would prefer they could cut down internally before they cut back on the consumers and their resources, and we wrote a resolution about it, and we're going to be taking it up at the convention here, and I really wanted to have Ken read it to you guys.
Is Ken going to read?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, let me... Okay, we're going to do something I normally wouldn't do, but just because I'm using all kinds of equipment, I didn't have time to put this on available in Braille. So I'm going to try and do this off the computer. I have slowed it down. So as I say, I don't even like listening to Mr. Jaw sometimes, but there are occasions where we have to use the technology, and we're actually streaming live right now out through ACB Radio. So they're hearing some of the issues here, too, and we're going to read this, and I have it slowed down. Hopefully, if you have any problem, please yell quickly so we can fix it so you can understand, okay? So let's give it a shot. Hold on just a sec.
Whereas adaptive technology costs are extremely high and out of range for most blind or visually impaired persons to afford for themselves, and whereas learning to effectively use technology and learn numerous skills to live independently requires specific specialty training by highly skilled instructors whose costs are high due to their specialized training, and whereas blind and visually impaired persons are unable to gain skills from instructors teaching persons with other types of disabilities, and whereas the state of California is giving up an 80% rehabilitation funding match by cutting the budget of persons who so desperately need services in order to become taxpayers rather than tax recipients. And whereas blind and visually impaired persons may cost the state more money in the long run if nursing care is needed due to a lack of independent skills training. And whereas it is recognized that the California State Department of Rehabilitation must find other funding to supplement that given through the state budget. Now, page 2, therefore, be it resolved by the California Council of the Blind and Convention in the City of Los Angeles, this 26th day of October 2008, that this organization urged the Department of Rehabilitation to do an analysis on what is legal to cut funding for with consumer services, and that consumer services be the last resort to cut back on funding, and that these ideals be implemented to cut back on consumer funding as follows. 1. Regional center clients must be referred back to them for assistance in paying for services that can be covered by them. 2. Contract with out-of-state businesses to provide training resulting in job placement, such as Verizon, Stadler Center Hospitality Program, HIP, et al. 3. Provide home-based employment such as NTI as an option for consumers to go to work. 4. DOOR to implement public relations through PSAs, videos, to get more job placements. This can be accomplished if creative utilizing free-of-charge PSAs. 5. Encourage state universities and community colleges to hire people who are blind or visually impaired to work as aides, researchers, student housing, or other positions open to college or university students. 6. Page 3. Producing issuance letters stating that the technology equipment is on loan and needs to be returned if the individual's plan is not followed through with. Then the technology equipment can be administered out to other consumers. 7. Establish relationships with a variety of entities to provide internships and apprentice positions, as well as on-the-job trainings to develop into jobs. 8. Steps put in place to prevent professional clients from abusing the system with extreme lengthy programs not more than 10 years. 9. Have jobs developed with the California Relay Service and California Telephone Access Program for people who are blind or visually impaired. This would involve reading Braille, large print, and typing skills, and be it further resolved that this organization work with the director of the California State Department of Rehabilitation to implement all of the above.
That's the resolution. Obviously, when it goes to Resolutions Committee, there will be a rewrite. There actually was a rewrite, and I just want you to know that due to technology, I actually deleted my CCB folder, that was my form of technology. And so I don't have the rewrite, but that's really the gist of it, and it's all based off of that, and it's all very similar. So we will have the other portion, but it has all the same information on it, probably even just a little bit stronger, but it has all the same stuff. So I think we're going in the right direction to try and get the Department of Rehab to look towards other types of funding. Whether or not they are allowed to do that, I don't know that answer at this point, but that's why it's only a resolution. We want to see if this is a possible thing for them to implement so that we can once again do the services that we should be doing for our blind and visually impaired consumers. Thank you.
You guys, thanks so much for working with us today. You were really great, and I just love the rehab committee here. They've been such a help today, too. So big round of applause. I'm going to go to the back of the room for some of you that might want to ask some more questions that you had on your mind.
Hi,
Well, it's time for our third hour of our session. Tricia, that was a great presentation, informative, and maybe I can go back to rehab for help now that you guys have a budget. Don't know how much of a budget, but we'll see. Okay, moving on to the new things. Are the folks from Mobile Eyes here? Do I hear a Connie or a Bob? Ooh, they're both here. Well, shoot. Come on down. You want a chance to convince me that I need to look at this device?
Yeah.
All right. And so I'm going to be turning the microphone over to Bob LeBlanc. And I always mess up his company name, so I'm going to say that they are an assistive technology in Sacramento organization. And I've gone to their website to look up things and gotten information from other resources. They have a device that I read about. Don't know much about it. I think it's something that you folks will really, really appreciate, because here again, here's a new method of allowing us visually impaired people to have access to printed material. I'm going to turn the microphone over to Bob LeBlanc, and he's going to tell you all about it. So I will be quiet, and when he's done, I will come back, and then we can have I'll have my 15 minutes of fame and glory where I get to talk to you guys about the TV converters and maybe talking iPod. So I will turn the microphone over to Bob. And Bob, what is your company again? It's Assistive Technology
Center.
Connie's going to tell you all about it. Yeah. Oh, okay. So I'm going to turn the microphone over to Connie. Is somebody here that can assist Bob with electricity?
Good afternoon, everybody. How are you? What a great discussion you had today. You know, we are the Assistive Technology Center. Say that three times fast. We are located in Sacramento, California, and we love what we do. I love hearing the discussions about employment and becoming employed and all of those things that are integrated into making that a reality. As a blind person, I can tell you I've done a lot of things in my life, and the most important component of that, I think, is being able to sell yourself, to have that confidence that allows you to know that you can compete on terms of equality given proper training and opportunity. Those are the essential components. So when I came to work with Bob, I knew I could compete with him. And he's the technical aspect of our company, and we do a lot of things. Today we're going to present Mobileyes, but while he's setting up, I'm going to tell you some of the other things that we do. We do adaptive technology training and assessments, and that's a key when you want to become employed, is what are the things that you're going to need. And it does take some personal responsibility, because you have to make the decision about what's going to work for you, and in a convincing argument, make your counselor understand that this will allow you to fulfill the functions of a particular job. I also think the Department of Rehabilitation needs to give thought to self-employment. I was glad to see that in the resolution. While it was home-based business, that is a stepping stone to getting into your own business and really pulling that all together. We have developed some tutorials that people can purchase. We do online training. We have a booth here at the convention, so we have some brailled out list of tutorials that go anywhere from learning how to do online banking to Windows Basic, Windows Advanced, System Access, Introduction to System Access, JAWS training, and the like. I think we have over 30 tutorials available. They can either be purchased as CDs, or they can be sent to you as download links so you can retain them in your computer for reference. And I can tell you that we deal with people from all over the country when we do our online trainings, and they are quite popular. I just did a training, online training with someone from Perkins School for the Blind. That was near and dear to my heart because I used to live in Maine. So it was awesome to be able to do that training with this individual to learn how to use a Braille Sense. We do sell the Braille Sense. We have a lot of products, and you probably all know that if you've visited our website. We get excited about products because we know that they are an avenue to allowing people to become independent and to do the things they need and want to do. I have a bag of tricks that includes a slate and stylus, the Braille Sense. That's right. There's a person who thinks that. And I've had mine since fourth grade, so you know it's followed me around. I use a Braille Sense. I use a digital recorder sometimes. I use Mobilize. Mobilize is awesome when I'm going to a conference and I need to acquire information. It's multifaceted, and that's exciting to me. So today the whole theme seems to be how you develop those skills you need and how you take those and turn them into positive results. The beginning of that is knowing where the resources lie. You know, when we train people in adaptive technology, we don't expect they're going to be with us for years. We expect they're going to list some goals and objectives, define them, develop them, and become successful at what they're doing. And then we... are you ready?
All
right. Okay. So we do a lot of different things. I'd be more than happy to talk to you at our table today, but I'm very happy, and I want to thank Louis for giving us the opportunity to come here and be able to share the information about Mobilize. I think Mobilize can change the opportunities for people, allow for retail, store employment, lots of different things. So, again, my name is Connie LeBlanc. Bob is here with me, and we're going to demonstrate Mobilize for you. Thanks.
And, yeah, any rehab counselors that are here, you want to pay attention to this because your clients are going to start asking for this stuff. They might not know it exists yet. This is kind of a brand-new product for us. We are the new national marketing partners for Guerrilla Technologies. And so right now we're kind of the place you can get Mobilize. Ken Metz is using all of the outlets. Okay, so thank you, Ken. I mean, you could have relinquished an outlet. I mean, come on. So Ken is using up all the outlets, but fortunately, Mobilize can be used on battery power,
that's
what we're going to do. Let me describe Mobilize to you and what it does. First, let me describe the physical unit. We're going to have this at our table, and of course, people can come and talk to us after and actually put their hands on the device. Mobilize is based on the Samsung Q, which is a very, very tiny tablet computer. It is 9 inches long by 4 inches wide by about 2 inches thick. It weighs about 2 pounds, and it has a 10-megapixel camera married to the front of it. With that, we can perform optical character recognition. We can use it as a barcode scanner. We can use it as a magnification device. We can use it as a media player. We can use it as a notes recorder. We can use the professional version as a complete computer. So it's a full laptop in addition to being everything else. And it has on the back, on the part that's kind of facing us, there's a 7-inch screen. We can also output it to a standard computer monitor, so we can use it as a CCTV for those of us who like CCTVs. It has two basic controls, one on the left-hand side and one on the right-hand side that we use with our thumbs because we are human beings. We have opposable thumbs. Big hand for opposable thumbs. Yay. Okay. Opposable thumbs. I said that to my, you know, I was doing a presentation with my daughter. She said, "You got these guys applauding for opposable thumbs." I said, yeah. On the left round button that we use is a joystick, and it does pretty much left, right, up, and down. It substitutes for your arrow keys. And the other side we refer to as north, south, east, and west. And the buttons always have the same function, so the device has a lot of different functionalities. But no matter what you're in, we can teach somebody how to use Mobilize in about 15 minutes. Because the north button, for example, is always to exit whatever feature you're in. So if I'm in magnification feature, I want to get out of it, I hit the north button. If I'm in, you know, scan and read, and I want to exit that, I hit the north button. So whatever I'm in and I want to get out of, I hit north. South is always the action button. Whatever action needs to be taken. If I'm in a mode where play and pause, then the action button when something is paused is play. And when it's playing, well, the action button is pause. So it's always whatever action needs to be done. The east and west buttons. East is always the positive action. West is always the negative action. So if I'm messing around with my volume, east is more volume, west is less volume. If I'm changing my magnification mode, east is more magnification, west is less magnification. If I'm asked the question yes or no, east is yes, west is no. So it always goes the same way. The positive action is east, the negative action is west. We're going to be using this. Now I'm going to just have Connie turn that on. Connie's going to use the basic features and take us through the menus. I'm going to stand around the front so that I can actually take this microphone when you don't need to be hearing me and you can hear Mobilize. Ooh, a little feedback.
So there is a basic version of Mobilize and a professional version of Mobilize, but it's the same unit. Okay, the only difference is that with professional you get the fully functional computer, and Bob was just turning off the computer because we've used it as a computer recently. Right?
Mobilize loaded. Press enter to begin.
Your microphone, okay. I'll keep it on. Mine on here.
Okay.
Okay? So just go through. Now it said press enter to begin, so Connie's going to press the enter key.
Organizer.
Now we're in the menus. And I'm using the toggle switch to go through the joystick to go through the menus.
Media center. Click and read menu. Magnification menu. Click and read menu. Media center. Organizer. Get date and time.
Okay, get date and time is part of organizer.
Voice notes options exist.
Voice notes options exist. Voice note is a 30-second quick recorded note that you can take. Maybe a small list, somebody's phone number, something you want to record quickly.
Next. Recordings options exist.
Recordings is a full recording for as much time as you have on either your hard drive or external storage or whatever. Since it records in WMA mode, we figure there's about, on a 40 gig hard drive, there's about 1600 hours of WMA folder. So, and then you can transfer them, so it records a lot.
Countdown timer.
Countdown timer for when you want to make that 3-minute egg. Okay? Or you have an appointment coming up in 45 minutes, you can set a timer and it'll come on and let you know.
Get date and time.
And then we go back to get date and time.
Okay, go to the right.
Media center.
Media center. Now I'm going to get a whole different thing where we can read e-books or documents. We'll go through that one at a time.
Play music. Options exist.
Yeah. We're going to play some music.
Play music from removable device.
These are your options.
Play music from hard drive.
The one.
Selected.
So when I move, when Connie uses the east and west keys, east moves to the next song, west moves to the previous song in the playlist. And if I want to move within that song or audio entry, fast forward or reverse, I use my left and right arrow keys on my joystick side.
and I just paused it.
Okay, so let's...
You know, escape.
Yeah, get out of that.
Exit feature.
That's the north key she pressed for.
Media center.
And now we're back to media center.
Now let's go down through there again.
Play music. Options. Read a book. Options exist.
Read a book. Books in WMA or MP3 format. If you have the professional version, you can also read Audible books.
Yeah. Read a document. Options exist.
Read a document, Microsoft Word files, text files, anything like that that you will have taken from your computer and maybe put on a thumb drive for easy retrieval. The device has a couple of USB ports. We'll talk about what's on it in a couple seconds.
View photos. Options exist.
View photos, it kind of came about in a weird way. One of our clients in Sacramento is a blind photographer. Okay? And we figured, a blind photographer. But he introduced Mobilize to the Association of Blind Photographers. Who knew? Right? The Association of Blind Photographers. So they said, you know what? We'd really like to be able to use this camera and computer thing together so that we can take and view photos and do, like, you know, slideshows for people and all that. So the company incorporated that into an update.
Sure. Okay, we're back to
play music. Options exist.
Go up and to the right.
Click and read menu.
Click and read menu. Mobilize Basic at its heart is a scan and read device. And we have three different camera modes: close-up camera, standard camera, and long distance camera. With close-up camera, we can scan and read stuff from 6 inches to 24 inches. With a standard camera, we can scan and read from 2 feet to 20 feet. And with a distance camera, we can scan and read from 20 feet to 400 feet. Okay? And it's pretty accurate. Let me tell you, I've done some billboards and stuff at 400 feet, or signs, company directories. It works great.
And at a conference, I took a picture of the list of the rooms that were available for the different conferences, and I was about 20 feet away, and I didn't have to ask where the room meetings were going to be held. So that's pretty empowering. Excuse me? Yes, I am.
Okay, so go to click and read menu, or in there, go down.
Close off camera. Options exist.
Okay, let me make sure that's on.
Okay, close-up camera. Let's go into close-up camera.
Read in column mode.
Let me have Connie go through these before we actually do the scan.
Read in tabular mode. Read barcode.
Okay, there are three different things I can do with a close-up camera. Read in column mode, which will be like a newspaper, magazine, anything like that. We'll read down column 1, down column 2, down column 3. When I want it to go into tabular mode, that's if I'm looking at a bank statement or a bill or something like that. If I'm looking at my bank statement, I don't want it to read down all of my dates and then all of my check numbers and then all of my amounts. I want it to read date, check number, amount. And that's tabular mode. And when I want to read a barcode, I can take, you know, my product and I can put like a can or something and line it up with Mobilize to make sure that I'm getting the Dinty Moore beef stew and not the Alpo. Very important stuff. You know what I always like is you see the cans of the Alpo and they say, now new improved flavor. Who tests that? Okay. Okay, so we're going to do, I have Mobilize on its stand. Let me explain the stand to you for a couple of seconds. The stand is about 18 inches high, and it's a way whereby if I'm not on the road using Mobilize, like hung around my neck type of thing, I can actually put documents under here, and they're the exact proper distance to scan an 8.5 by 11 sheet. Okay? And there's little guides so that you can kind of slide it in into the front and it stops it at the right place in the back so you can, you know, you're taking the entire 8.5 by 11 sheet. And it doesn't matter if it's upside down, right side up, sideways, it doesn't matter. So that's what I'm going to have Connie do now is read this page from our wild and exciting convention guide that we got here today.
Okay, so we're going to use close-up cameras.
Yes.
Okay.
Selected.
And the camera is on, and it takes a little snapshot.
The first scan is always the longest because the software, the drivers have to load.
Loading camera.
Oh, there's a little click.
Processing image.
Now, the thing about this is that the scan is instant. So it takes a few seconds to do the recognition, but any computer does. But the scan, unlike having to wait for a flatbed scanner, takes a second.
Okay, here it is.
Containing of two large chairs, the stairwell, and payphones around its perimeter. Starting at the main hotel entrance with your back to it, an immediate left turn heading north takes you to a tiled corridor leading to the San Diego Ballroom, San Diego 1 and 2. Pass this corridor, the next opening on the left side is the entrance to the Palm Grill restaurant.
So I paused it.
So Connie paused the thing. We can, now our action buttons, east and west. West is delete the file, east is save the file. Okay? Because remember, positive and negative actions. After that, we can choose with our up and down arrow keys whether we want to read it one page at a time, one line at a time, one word at a time, one letter at a time. So if we need to know how something is spelled, we can. There's a complete OCR solution that is portable, and really this is a product that's probably targeted more to people who are professionals working in the field, people who are students. Yes. Oh, let me give you the mic.
One of the problems that I have with my OCR, which is can't remember the a big problem for me, is that it doesn't recognize very well the italics, emboldened kinds of things. So I just really don't like scanning things because I can't, you know, it gives me a bunch of carrots and things.
That is kind of the, you know, scanning works that way. But I remember back to our first scanning programs that were like 68% accurate, and everybody said, "Ooh, ah!" And today you get things that are about 95% accurate, and you know, it's going to make the same mistakes. Things that are highly stylized fonts will knock off all scanning programs, software, anything like that. Generally speaking, Kurzweil software, OpenBook, OmniPage, they all work kind of the same. As a matter of fact, they're all kind of based on the same, what we call scanning engines, OCR engines. But you can't read handwriting. You can't, you know, pictures, combinations of pictures or like pie charts or anything like that will throw it off. Publishers love to use what they call drop caps. A drop cap is a huge letter that starts a paragraph and it takes up about 5 lines, okay? They love them. They love them. And so your scan and read software is going to put in R in front of every line, you know, like remembering back to the days, and this R is this huge thing and it's just going to put it in there in inappropriate places.
So really it's sighted people who need to change.
That's right.
Right? Am I right? That's right.
That's right. Change them sighted publishers. Because we try to make sure that, and another thing that doesn't scan in well is large print. So, you know, yes, sir.
Will it avoid or go around that problem and still scan the information so you can at least get something off the table?
Yes.
Good.
Oh, yes. All of them will do that to a certain extent, depending on what your scanner is, the DPI and all that. I've had better success scanning with with Mobilize than with anything else that I've ever had to use.
Well, and I have too. I've taken it to a shopping mall and done an indoor directory because I've always wondered if you could do that, right? And it works for some of them. I don't want to say for all of them because, again, we're talking about sighted people who like the little stylized text.
And we're going to use tabular mode for that, by the way, because I don't want it to read a list of all the office names and then a list of all the office numbers. Okay? So we're going to use tabular mode to read that, because tabular mode or column mode is what we can get whenever we use any of the scanning modes. So when I use standard camera, close-up camera, or any of those, let's kind of go through some of these. So I want to take some more questions after we get done the scanning part.
I'm going to delete it. So you have to choose...
You're out of it.
Are you?
I think so.
No.
File not saved.
Okay.
Read file now.
He thinks he knows.
There's not a lot going on for sighted guys at this point, okay?
Good, she says. Okay, I'm getting out of the feature.
Exit feature.
I have feelings too, you know.
Click and read menu.
Okay, we're back in the click and read menu. Where do you want to go?
Go down.
Close-up camera options exist.
We already know about that.
Standard camera options exist. Long-distance camera options exist.
Now, those are the options, again, read in column mode or read in tabular mode. I cannot scan a barcode at 400 feet. Okay? I mean, let's have a little sense about it here. If anybody has anything that may have a barcode on it, a soda bottle or water bottle, an open bag of chips, anything that you would like to give me as a snack, pretty much. Okay? We have this. Oh, let's see if it has. It does. It does have a barcode. Let's try this. This is a trial sign. Let's go.
Hey, I have a snack.
Go back to your close-up menu.
Okay.
Standard close-up camera options exist. Read in column mode. Read in tabular mode. Read a barcode.
Okay, and I'm entering on the barcode. Okay, you ready for this?
Selected. Loading camera.
One thing I'd like to say about the UPC barcode reader, I talked about Mobilize solving some problems in terms of employment or offering some opportunities.
Image.
When I'm at my job and we get new products in, I use the UPC barcode reader to scan them in, and then I put a Braille label on it with a code so that I can input them into our accounting program. And then whenever we enter them or we sell them, the code comes up and it works. Think about the possibilities in terms of retail. You know, I mean, I just think that when we get a device, we need to also contemplate how it's going to work best for us and what kinds of opportunities it'll open. It's scanning it.
Nope. GOJO Industries Inc. The item is Parel hand sanitizer W/moisturizer 0.5 ounces/15 milliliters.
And it tells you how many liters.
So this
pretty
is your
cool.
Purell hand sanitizer in here. Of
and then it brings you back
next
to the click and read menu.
Next time, bring something to eat. Okay, thank you.
Wash your hands first.
Wash your hands, okay? And how about the hungry hombre heat and eat hearty burrito? There are 850,000 barcodes in the database, and it's not just for food items, as we've seen, although when you get the food item, it'll tell you it's a, you know, Diet Coke 12-ounce can or something like that, and the manufacturer and the item. So it does not associate any barcode with a price because all prices are different. If I go to, you know, Jim's convenience store down the street or if I go to Bel Air, I'm going to get a different price on that can of Coke. It doesn't associate with price.
And any additions to that UPC list will be sent to you as an email download.
Upgrades to Mobilize are free forever. Okay? So all the software updates are free. It's a decision that was just made a couple of months ago by the manufacturer. They're really trying to make this a product that's usable.
So I just want to ask Louie, is he interested yet? All right, okay. That's what I like to hear.
Let's keep going down that list. I don't know where I'm at. But.
Close-up camera options exist. Standard camera options exist. Long-distance camera options exist. Hot shot camera.
Hot shot.
Hot shot camera. When you're a hot shot, okay? Hotshot camera will take a picture for you every 3 seconds. So if you are reading a book, now one of the things that we're is going to be on a future update is to be able to set that interval, because let me tell you, okay, I like to be as completely honest as possible. 3 seconds is pretty fast. Okay, so when you hear the little camera click, you flick the page. Click, flick the page. Click, flick the page. Then it does all of the scanning at once. And then it does all of the OCR at once. And then it does all of the reading at once. Okay, and it saves it as one file. So if you're reading a book and you don't want to do, you know, one page at a time, you go into Hotshot Camera and hit that and be ready to move those fingers.
How much does it cost?
Well, okay. We'll get there in 2 seconds. I want to get... Yeah.
If you have a book,
page one is
page two.
Right.
Okay, if you're taking a book and you're going to turn pages, is it... taking a picture of both pages, page one and two, or is it? Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, if you have a book that'll fit underneath there, like a, you know, paperback type of book, and you just are flicking pages one after another, it'll read all of page one first and then all of page two after. So it'll do page one, two, you know, three, four, five, six. It always knows that the left-hand page is the page that you read first and then the right-hand page is the page that you read second. Because if it can figure up and down, well, it knows left to right. Okay, so after you've got north and south figured out, east and west comes naturally. Price on Mobilize. There's Mobilize Basic, which is everything that we're talking about here. I'm not doing any of the pro stuff here right now. Is $3,500. Okay. If you were,
wait, I want to ask a question. How much did you pay for your Braille note? Okay. The professional version of Mobilize is
$49.95,
which is what I paid for my Braille Sense.
And it has, yeah, you know, if you went out, you buy a barcode scanner for about $1,300. And then an OCR program, Kurzweil, costs $1,000 for the software, a box of software. So, you know, if you went out and bought everything that Mobilize can do as individual units, it would cost you between $9,000 and $12,000. So, you know, I always love to talk price about Mobilize because it's a great deal. And you know, we were just talking about counselors are trying to start to, you know, looking at saving, you know, money in purchasing things for individuals. And if you need a laptop and a scanning device and a magnifier, you know, my kids, I had two vision impaired kids that went through high school, and the backpacks they had to carry with all the stuff, I could send them to school right now with Mobilize, 2.5 pounds. Let's keep going through the menus here. After Hotshot Camera is?
Scan and read from scanner.
Scan and read from scanner. That is a professional thing. The professional model comes with a flatbed scanner in case you want to use it, you know, as part of a workstation setup. And with that, we can do these functions. Let's go into options for that.
Scan and read from scanner. Read in tabular mode. Read barcode. Read currency.
It's a currency identifier when you have the Pro, so you can use it as a currency identifier as well. Let's go down again.
Read in column mode.
Okay. Let's go back to the right.
Read currency. Mobile. Close up. Options exist.
Go back to the... Okay, that's magnification menu we're in here. Let me...
Click and read menu.
Okay.
Magnification menu.
Okay, now we're in magnification.
We'll go down there. Oh, wow.
Mobile. Close up. Options exist.
Mobile close up is going to be if I'm using this either on a stand or to use. I don't know if anyone here is familiar with like the SenseView or the Amiga or any of these portable magnification devices. There are a ton of them out there. They have like a 4 or 5 inch screen. This has a 7 inch screen, and you can use it that way. I can also output this on my little stand here and output it to a computer monitor and use mobile close up as a CCTV. So if I want to be able to get that extra magnification in there, I'll put this on a 21-inch flat panel monitor. Man, it looks great. It really does. And you can capture the image that you're looking at as well. Yes, sir.
How many menus do you have to deal with this? Because just the other day I got tinkering around with Zoom text because my computer died. But anyhow, we got it squared away. But it wasn't tracking the line, so I was opened up a menu, then opened up another menu, and then tinkered around with marking the box, closing the menu, didn't work, got into the menu, got just on and on and on. I still don't have it. But how easy is this to work? Are we going to learn a lot of different boxes and menus?
No. This device is really easy to learn. As a blind person, I learned how to use it in 15 minutes.
About 15 minutes, because everything works the same way. If I want additional magnification, I hit east key. If I want less, I hit the west key. If I need to refocus, I hit the action button. Pretty much that's it. The one thing that it does not do as a CCTV is it doesn't give me reverse mode. Some people like that black background with a white lettering. This is always full color. Okay, it's always full color. Now, everybody says, well, I don't use the magnification, because I'm a blind person, or I'm not going to use this feature or that feature. And granted, probably not everybody's going to use every feature that's in, Mobileye. But how many people, show of hands here, have Microsoft Word? Okay, everybody keep your hands up if you've ever done a mail merge. Okay, so that hands went down real fast. Okay, how many people have ever entered formulas into tables using Microsoft Word? I've got one Power Word user out back there. Three. Okay, but pretty much you're not going to use each and every. Okay, and with Microsoft Word, we can also put, embed pictures and pie charts from Excel. How many people done that? Pie charts from Excel, import it into Microsoft Word, it's an OLE object. Okay, one person, I'm going to get your name later. Unless you're just a troublemaker. Okay, so we've narrowed that down to one person. Basically, anything, you're not going to use every feature of ever. Okay, I've got a lot of features on my laptop that I don't even use. I got the little eyeball camera, I never use that. It costs me an extra $50 to get it put in there, but I never use it. Let's go back down through.
Mobile distance options exist.
Mobile distance, this is if I want to be able to see something across a room, which even, the SenseView magnifiers and Amigas and stuff will not do, is take a look across a room and be able to home in on maybe someone's face or a sign or something like that. So if you have limited vision, mobile close-up is more of a CCTV application. Mobile distance is a far viewing application.
Let's go to again.
Mobile close-up option. Check writing. Still plus magnification.
Okay, go back up.
Still magnification.
Go to the right.
Magnification viewer.
Right.
Games menu.
Games menu. There is a game on here. We don't push this as a games machine, okay? But if you really want to kill some time, audio darts. And it keeps score, and it will actually go from, it pans the sound from left to right or from right to left. And when you think it's close to the center of the target, you hit the enter key, and, it makes a funny little sound. And
it also means that the options are open for creating new games. And, we like to play games, right? That's right.
The pro version also will throw in Grizzly Gulch. So that's kind of a time killer.
I love Grizzly Gulch.
Utilities menu.
Okay, we're going to go down through the utilities menu real quick.
I've got a question.
Yes.
My question is, if I would have a need for a CCTV system where I could take multiple pages of text, like let's say a newscast or commercial copy. I've got page 1, page 2, page 3. I want it to read to me in such a way that it scrolls from the beginning of that document to the end without page breaks so that I can use it like a teleprompter. But I also want it to be able to reformat what I'm reading to select a different font, something that might be more readable.
When you use the scan and read feature from Mobilize, what it will do, you can set, one of the things that we're going to go through here in utilities menu is setting your font, and it will reformat anything that you take a picture of into whatever color set that you want, background, font size, anything, and it will do exactly that. It will scroll down so you don't have to do the back and forth thing, but this will do that. And as a matter of fact, if right now I'm getting battery low, but stop by our table tomorrow and we'll show you just what we mean.
Okay, the menu we're going to show was utility. So let's do it real quick since we have no electricity.
Okay.
Power status.
Power status.
Change reading voice. Options exist.
Change reading voice. There's a male voice and a female voice. Okay.
Change reading speed.
Change reading speed.
Perform Mobilize update.
Perform Mobilize update. We said updates were always free. You get one of the things you get with all the Mobilize is a thumb drive, and we just email you the updates. You put it on your thumb drive, put the thumb drive in the USB port, go down to Perform Mobilize update. It happens automatically.
It can't get any simpler than that.
Okay. Perform About Mobilize.
About Mobilize. That'll give you the version number, firmware, all that.
Set date and time.
Remember back in Organizer, I'll get to you in 1 second, man. Remember once upon a time we had get date and time back in our Organizer function? Well, here's where we set the date and time, because the computer is basically stupid. It only knows what we tell them. So if we tell him, it's December 25th at 2 a.m., that's what it's going to tell us.
Set low vision settings.
Set low vision settings. This is what you were talking about earlier. And this is where I can set my font color, background color, font size, and it will take everything that I have taken pictures of, and it will reformat that text to fit one screen at a time. And every time you hit that page down key, it'll bring you to the next page, next page, next page, and you can read it that way. And if you need it read to you, not only can you see it visually, but you can have it read to you in that nice female voice or a rugged male voice.
Now, one question with this. Is this a spot where you can actually change it from black to white?
Yes, in this particular function, yes. Not as the CCTV. The CCTV function is going to give me color. But after I've stored a text file or a document file, now I can take and make those letters any color and size I want. Yes, ma'am.
If I had a document that I scanned and I wanted to save it and download it to my computer, what kind of file can I download it as?
Mobilize will take the files that it has scanned in. You can save them off to a thumb drive. It's this in one of the menus. It says how to export documents in my click and read menu. Export stored files. So if I've saved that file onto Mobilize, I can export it to a thumb drive as a text file.
Battery low.
Okay. Okay, let's keep going. One.
Set low vision settings.
Go down.
Set display settings.
Go down. That's it. Set display settings is some people like it brighter if you're going to use it as a magnifier a lot, so you want to set those power settings. If you're not going to, then we can set a battery saving settings where we can pretty much turn the screen right off, and it will take the 3 hour. It is a 3 hour battery. If I take that 3 hour battery, yeah, you might as well turn it off. Yeah. And we'll plug it in and give it a breath there.
About Mobilize.
And If you want to really use that brightness feature, that's going to cut your battery time to about 2 hours. Okay. If I, on the other hand, want to turn my screen off and just use it as the click and read device, that's going to boost it up to about 4.5 to 5 hours. That screen kills the battery. So the higher level you set the screen for, the lower battery level you're going to, the less battery you're going to get. It takes about 2 hours to do a complete charge. And something somebody told me when I was showing it actually I think it was a CCB group in Sacramento. And they said, you know, we passed it around, and Mobilize looks cool. It doesn't look like, it doesn't have that, you know, a lot of people think of the stigma of using adaptive technology that makes you look like you're using adaptive technology. Mobilize looks like a cool camera. Okay, and you just hang that around your neck and you can be taking pictures of everything. Recently, ironically enough, this is one of the last places we've shown Mobilize, because we did do the national marketing partnership. So I've been all over the country showing Mobilize to people. And fortunately, Connie can be here today, so I don't have to do both parts. But I just did that. And I hate to fly, but I love to talk about Mobilize. So
any other one questions about Mobilize?
The other. Okay,
I do have a question.
Louis.
Me.
Okay.
We'll come back to you here.
Okay. Everything sounds cool. I'm looking forward to going to your table and trying out a few things. However, this is something that I won't benefit from, but I'm sure a lot of people will, and that is this. Can you, using your distance viewing feature, take a picture, aim the camera in the general vicinity of a sign or something. Take a picture of it, freeze it, and then have it converted into a text file or even into speech.
Well, we would use, what we would do is just use the distance camera to find the, you know, if you wanted to use the distance viewer to find where the sign was at, then get out of that feature and then go into the click and read menu and use the long distance camera, and then it would do exactly that.
But you also want to say that it's, sometimes you have to try more than once. Let's say somebody, and as a blind person, how am I going to know there's a billboard that I would like to take a picture of and know what it says? So someone says to me, wow, what a cool billboard, you know? I take a picture of it, and I've done it. We were probably 200, maybe 300 feet away, and it read it back to us. I took a picture once of a gentleman who was holding a chart in my office, and it read his name tag and the chart. So now I knew what his name was, right? Which I'm always the last to know. So I thought that was a really cool feature.
Okay, I have a lady here that has a question.
Hi, the barcode reader, can that be programmed to include other information, such as prices, and can that be updated into Excel?
The barcode reader is not editable.
We're talking to the manufacturer about that, because it would be a great feature.
That's, remember that Mobilize is always being worked on, and that updates are always free. As a matter of fact, the one big update we're working on right now, and I'm going back to the rest of your question in 2 seconds, is GPS. So we're building GPS into Mobilize, and that's been promised to us by the end of the year. So at that point, it'll have a GPS feature as well, and that is going to be a free upgrade for Mobilize professional users. So if you get the Mobilize professional now, and a month and a half from now, the GPS is going to be added on to that. With the one thing that you do have to do is you got to go out and grab your own Bluetooth GPS antenna. Right. It'll work with any, you know, standard Bluetooth GPS antenna. The barcode reader is we have to use what they give us. It's not, to the best of my knowledge, exportable into Excel. And what it tells you is the manufacturer name and the product. You can't get any nutritional information or anything like that. However, if I wanted to know what the ingredients of something were in a can of soup, and I knew that it was a can of soup because I had just used the barcode reader on it, I would the camera and just the OCR, and OCR my ingredients list.
Yeah, but I don't think that was part of your question. Yeah. You want to be able to access that information on a spreadsheet, right? There are a lot of accounting programs, like the accounting program I use in my business. Once I input items into the program, when I pull them up again to do sales or whatever, they can be PLUs or they can be codes that you input. So if you input the code, all of that information is generated on the sales receipt or whatever. So using an Excel sheet, while it can be very helpful, if you're talking a retail business, you're better off doing it through the accounting program. Just a thought. Yep. Say that again.
Yeah, professional gets adds the scanner, and it has a currency identifier, yes.
Our special at this convention, if you purchase Mobilize Professional, you receive Microsoft
Office Pro, either 2003 or 2007.
Right.
And so no the charge. Office of your choice. We're giving you an office.
That's right.
Good. Excellent. But
somebody, sir. Yeah.
One more question, because we got to wrap up because there's another meeting scheduled for this room.
Okay.
Just real quick, Rob Turner, I was going to ask if on that barcode it would be ideal if someone could take blank barcodes and create their own labels and so forth. But I guess that's not available.
Not at this time. And I'm always saying not at this time because those guys are really working like busy little beavers out there trying to bring in features. And when we hear suggestions, it's like the thing with the blind photographers. You know, 2 months ago, Mobilize could not take standard pictures. But these guys said, boy, we really wish it could do this. And now it can.
I'd like to say before, I know Louis wants us to leave, but if you would like to get on our email list, see me at the table and I'll take your information because I send out a lot of information during the course of the month and I like to stay connected.
I have one more person I'm going to take a question from here because he's just been waiting ever so
patiently. Louis, he's been patient.
Oh, yes. Hi. Where can patients have a demonstration here in Southern California?
We're the national resellers, so we will go pretty much wherever we need to go to show people Mobilize if they need to. A lot of the San Diego Center for the Blind, for example, has a unit that they are using to show people. So San Diego has one. We're trying to work with a couple of other local vendors and agencies down here to get Mobilize in so that they can. But we also have a demo and tutorial that we have for any professional that wants one. We have it available for download on the website for regular end users, but if you're a rehab counselor or anything like that, come and see us for a DVD.
So is there still the $500 demonstration fee that you emailed me about?
There is. Because
if we have any patient that comes to our center, $500 demo fee.
Well, we're trying to get them in. If your center, I'll talk to you later about that because, you know, I don't want to take up time here, but your best bet is to get one in your center. They dig it in San Diego, and they're darn happy that they did because they're selling Mobilize there. Okay? But, yeah, I would advise you to get one down there. Really, we're doing demonstrations for agencies because of the way anybody reading the newspapers lately, the economy is not good. And so whereas we were kind of flying everywhere for free, we've put a small charge on actually going out. But when you purchase the Mobilize from the agency, we refund that to you. That's just, you know, so that we don't have that expenditure because we're little guys. Really. Okay,
folks, we've come to the end of our presentation, and I think this is a wonderful product. I'm going to definitely spend some time with Bob and Connie trying to see what I can do with this thing. I'm very impressed with it. There's a lot that's been put into one small device, and so let's give them a big hand for the presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see. Okay, I was planning on only giving them 45 minutes, but I was so impressed with their presentation that I said, let's try and go to the end. I wanted to cover briefly about a question that was brought up to me. Was there going to be any talk about TV converters? Since February 9th is 2009 is coming close. 17th. See, I knew I had it wrong somehow. Anyway, very briefly, is there anything accessible out there? No. However, there are some devices out there, and I'm only going to say this very quickly because I said that I would cover part of it. Sony makes a real cool converter that doesn't require much. You don't need to see to activate it. When you plug it in, it brings up a menu that wants to know what language you want. It defaults to English. You hit enter. And the second time you hit enter, it goes into scan mode to identify all the signals that it can pick up and program itself. It's all you do. Within up to 3 minutes, it'll just make an occasional beep on your speaker, and then if it goes, it'll go back to the first channel it finds on the list that it reprogrammed itself, and you're done. And it works great. I mean, my mother-in-law's TV, she has a regular TV, and she would get an average of 24 to 26 channels. Now she's getting about 63 channels. It's a Sony. Sony makes one. Philips has one. I've seen the... I'm not impressed with the one from RCA, and I didn't care for the Toshiba one. They're all the same. Okay, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. This particular Sony one is the most accessible to me because it's got tactile buttons you can feel. Sony.
Okay.
Sony.
Yes. There's only two that pass through the audio description.
Okay, now see, there's something I didn't even think about.
Did you talk to Eric Richards?
As a matter of fact, I did get an email, and I did read it, and I totally neglected to mention that. Yeah, right. It's my fault. But I was just looking for, can I get it and get it working before I have to go call my Joe the plumber, the sighted guy, you know. But Joe the plumber was busy, so I had to figure it out. Yeah. Okay, that's it. I'm going to turn the microphone over to our friends here at Bernice. And I am sure that she's going to have a nice program set up for you folks here. I'm going to be putting the microphone down. I'm sure you're tired of hearing me talking, but Bernice, I'm going to turn the microphone over to you. Okay. All right. Before I turn the microphone over to Bernice, I'm going to tell you guys, in Southern California, we've started a computer interest group, technology interest group, and it's going to be meeting at one of our local places, Junior Blind of America, and it's going to be a monthly thing. This coming month, in November 1st, there's going to be a presentation on the accessible iPod and how to work with it and what it can do for you. And there will be other things. So if you're interested and you live in the Southern California area, you're welcome to attend. There will be other topics that will be publicized, that will be covered. We're going to try and do this in a way that we can publicize what upcoming events will be coming up 3 months in advance so you can plan ahead. So now I will turn the microphone over to Bernice. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Just to follow up with what Louis was saying about converter boxes, you can contact the ACB office in Washington, and they can send you or tell you how to contact the FCC to find out which of the converter boxes passes through the audio description. It's the one from Best Buy, and I can't remember the names of the two brands. One is from Best Buy, and one you get, I think, through Radio Shack. But it's not a Radio Shack, not a name I recognize and associate with Radio Shack.